Welcome, everyone, to the Borough of Roosevelt Council meeting of February 6, 2023, 7:11 p.m. Welcome, everyone. It's been a long time, probably since before COVID, that we've had this many people here. Adequate notice of this meeting, as required by Chapter 231, PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on January 6, 2023, which was posted on the bulletin board in the Roosevelt Post Office and in the Borough Hall. The notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Roll call.
Mr. Robert Atwood.
Here.
Mr. Louis Essikoff.
Here.
Mr. Michael Hamilton.
Here.
Ms. Constance Hertzstrom.
Here.
Mr. Stephen Mocker.
Here.
Mr. Joseph Trammell.
Here.
Mayor Peggy Malkin.
Here. Okay, we have a very full night tonight, as I know you all realize that. So what I would like is a motion to go out of order and let the discussion about cannabis go first so that the people who are here for that reason can leave and not have to listen to, you know, stay for the rest of our meeting. So do I have a motion to change the order?
We do. Move.
Second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So as you all know, we are beginning another discussion about cannabis tonight. We have quite a few members from the public who wish to speak about it. We were, and also we have a representative of the cannabis industry. We were also going to have a man from, he's on the Cannabis Regulatory Commission in Jersey City, and he is he is sent by the League of Municipalities to speak to different towns. So he was going to try to come here tonight, but it didn't work out. So he will be here March 6th, which is not our next meeting, but the meeting after.
His
name is Ron Mondello. Neil, is the what you just handed out, is that from him?
That's
from you. Okay. So when he comes on the 6th, he'll have additional information. And I think basically he presents an overview of everything about having a cannabis business in town. I believe advantages, disadvantages, everything. So he'll be here on the 6th. But we wanted to start this discussion now. So, is there anyone from the public who would like to come and begin? Lawrence? So just state your name and address.
Sure. I'm a little injured right now.
I see, so. Yeah.
What are we doing? Public comment?
No, well, discussion.
And good evening, Mayor Malcolm and Council. My name is Lawrence Mendes, and my address is 65 North Rochdale Avenue, and the owner of Mendes Farm.
Turn the microphone on.
Yes, it's all the way. Oh, okay, there we go.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
And I just wanted to briefly explain what's going on. So back in 2005, we purchased the farm through the Fund for Roosevelt. And everything's been going good. We started a community-supported agriculture, and the members come every week to pick up their naturally grown organic shares that we do. We even had a roadside market, and then coronavirus came along, and that things got kind of hard. So, you know, basically, it's a struggle to be out there farming. It's not easy. I enjoy it. I love it, and I'm going to keep on doing it. But then, like, it's just that because we're farmland preserved, it is hard. You know, we purchased it that way, but it's hard because we're restricted to certain activities. So my goal was to, like, create this new venture, which would include nature paths, wildlife refuge, and sort of a real preservation farm. And in order to do that, we need, you know, funds to get it done. And it's hard to do that with, you know, organic food, $3 a pound. So recently, Governor Murphy just signed a bill that allows the Department of Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Fisher, passed a bill which allows all preserved farms to conduct these SOEs. They're like special events and occasions. And we're allowed, and that just opens up, you know, it gives us relief. So it's exactly what I need. We're going to plant native trees, native plants. We're going to open, have flower gardens, but we want to keep it natural as possible and just make, and that even includes agritourism is on the bill. It's at the House now, but we can go ahead and start. You just have to put a special application because the governor already signed it conditionally. And there's also including camping, like agri-camping and tourism where you can educate, you know, and show your organic systems. So we've been doing this for 13 years, and we have some amazing systems. We have hardly any inputs. And I'm sharing it. During this time, 13 years, weekly pickups, we have these members that I've met. We have members from, like, all different walks of life, all different levels of income. And we've met investors. And that's when cannabis came along. With this process, though, it's sort of just a branch for me because I want to continue doing the organic farm, and I'm going to continue doing that. That's what I'm interested in. But I'm also interested in sharing, you know, my ideas and the way we farm using compost and no-dig techniques, and actually grow. I can share the idea of, for them, the plan to grow cannabis four seasons, like, you know, using biomass and different ways to grow it all year long, like no other farms can really do. So, finally, this great guy here, Neil Schlosh and his wife, you know, they've been members for 13 years. They were members way over there when it was, Gold Farms. I wasn't a part of that, but that's how I got in all this. And after 13 years, you know, it's time. And for me, it's not me, it's my wife, Heidi, right there. So she was invited in on this deal. And so my neighbor, Mr. Wong here, who I have a long relationship with, he's a farmer. He owns Wong's farm. So he is fully, he has no deed restrictions or preservations. He's not preserved. So he's agreed to lease the 10 acres, I believe, to the owners. So now Kristen Schlosh, right here, is Neil's wife, and they will be the owners. They are the owners of this entity that was created. And that's, I know there's been a lot of different, you know, things going on and people twisting things around, but that's what's going on right now. So she's has my blessings. For me, it's a tree, and we have a branch now. So I'm going to continue doing that. And if she wants to do that, and if the town, I know we can do great things because with the income that's generated from that, one, it will bless the town on the taxes. Two, it would allow us to continue with this preservation of a wildlife refuge, you know, a nice park and nature trails for open to the public. That's all I want, you know. So it creates relief. And if anyone has any questions about this, if you just go online to United States Department of Agriculture, New Jersey, and look up Douglas Fisher, he has a video out. He's the Secretary of Agriculture, and he will explain this whole new process that's relief specifically for preserved farms. So cause they know we're struggling, and we are. So I hope you guys, the town and council, you know, can look at this as a positive thing. So with that, I'll introduce you to Neil Schlosh, and
Thank you, Lawrence.
Should I take this off the mic?
All right. Good evening, everyone.
Please, for the record, just...
Yeah, sure, Neil Schloss, Millstone Township.
I think right over your regular, your address.
19 Robbins Road. We're good. All right, well, thank you for having me tonight. It was fun doing the presentations on Zoom, but it's great to see everyone in person. And so... let me start with just explaining who I am. For some of you, you might know my background. Some of you don't. So I'm a resident of Millstone Township for close to 20 years now, coming up to 20 years in August. I'm married with two kids. I've been a CPA since 1995, worked for a few mid-sized accounting firms, and then went on my own and started Castle Consulting in 1998 as a consulting, technology, and accounting firm. So in 2005 was when I actually started getting involved with the cannabis space because, of course, my mom had passed away from cancer, and due to just researching stuff online, I realized that cannabis could have been an option for her. So from 2005 forward, it was kind of like a lot of research in, at that point, it was the California Compassionate Use Act, which I kind of studied because cannabis became legal in California in 1996. So since that time, I put a lot of time into understanding the industry, getting things set up out in California. And then in 2013 was when CannaSense Total Wellness became a company out in California where it's a cannabis collective. As far as my involvement in my local community, I've been involved with Millstone Rec Wrestling Coach for 5 years. Of course, I'm supporting Allentown tonight since my son's team is wrestling for the sectionals. So give a shout-out to my son's team. Hopefully they won. As Lawrence had said, I'm a 13-year member of the Roosevelt Co-op programs. And I was a Board of Ed member from 2010 to 2013. And back when my kids were playing baseball, I was on the board of the Millstone Roosevelt Little League. So when it comes to Roosevelt, as you guys already know, the map shows on the north side of town where the farms are situated. So this is just a view from Google Maps showing the town, and then I zoomed in just to show you the location where the farms are and what that means for the farm owners in Roosevelt. So with the cannabis recreational legalizing, in 2021, this gave the opportunity for the possibility of three farms in town to, in the future, get an ordinance passed and start cultivating cannabis. Right now, we currently have an agreement with the non-preserved farm. And when I had spoken to you guys last year, I had already met with all the three owners of the farms to discuss the cannabis ordinance, cultivation licensing process, and then the vision of the entity, CannaSense Cultivators. Each of the owners of the farms were interested in me coming into the town and kind of doing the presentations to help move the ordinance along and answer questions that you guys might have. So most importantly is the guidelines that the CRC is putting out is how we will work with putting a site plan together and building out from what they're helping us with, as well as with you guys being on the council, there most likely will be a cannabis group formed to kind of help work together with the local council and the entity. So with that, it comes with the process of the application. There's a lot of procedures that need to be put together so that the entity can follow along. There'll be bookkeeping, record keeping options, inventory controls that need to be set up, test results that will be done with the cannabis created, concerns for recalls, the concerns of waste disposal and sanitation, and the rest that's on this list as far as standard operating procedures that need to be put together by the entity. Most importantly, as I've stated in the presentations before, is nothing really can happen with any cannabis entity until the local town gives the approval and gives a letter of support to the entity that's applying to the state. With that, besides the town approval, a zoning officer would just need to state through an affidavit that the class of business that's applying is in the right location in the zone and zoned properly. So besides that, the entity will put out an option for investors, and of course we would hope that local investors would want to invest into the growth in this industry. And as far as benefits to the town council, based on ordinance passing, can put a 2% tax on the cultivation license, manufacturing license, and dispensary license if they choose to have all three categories in town. It doesn't have to be 2%, but that's the cap where the town can actually go up to. So with that, like I said, if they do the other you guys do additional licensing options, that can be another form of revenue to the town, having either the manufacturing and dispensary licenses offered. As far as, of course, the benefits to you guys, as in general, the sooner you move along with this process, the sooner the option of revenue stream coming into town for the purposes of this industry. Besides that, it also is bringing some jobs into the town. So, and we would look to hire people in the town first before we would go out to other towns for the job opportunities. Just to give you a quick overview of a tax calculation or what is expected, based on examples I've heard, actually Ron spoke about as well, when that in an example of a 15,000 square foot cultivation site, the expected revenue for the entity as it ramps up could be up to $12 million per year, which on $12 million in revenue, the tax revenue expectation would be $240,000. The current model right now is demand is high, supply is low. So we are aware that as competition keeps coming into the state, that the supply will increase, bringing the demand down and, of course, overall bringing the tax revenue down because the expected revenue would be lower. One thing that's important with the farms in town is that they are farmland assessed. So if the farm is chosen and has a farmland assessment on that property, they would have to remove that portion of the property from farmland assessment tax to the normal tax rate that's assessed in town. So besides the revenue that could be earned through the 2% tax, you would also get an increase in the real estate tax revenue for that area within the town.
Neil, the size, so is that what you're proposing? It would be about a 15,000 square foot area here?
I mean, if we go with a full 10 acres and we build out, I mean, you would eventually have a larger square foot footing than that. But just as using it as an example for calculating out the expectation.
It's 43,560. Right. So.
Right. How much?
Yeah.
43,560. So, 1,500, that's 100 by 150, not as even as big as our building lots in town.
Agreed. So, I mean, of course, over time, if you could build out more, then there's a chance for more tax revenue. So trying to keep this short and sweet, does anyone have any questions on?
Quickly. You have hoop houses, I assume?
At this time, yes. We'd be using the hoop houses.
So how many hoop houses would you have?
There's currently 8 on the property. And, I mean, if we need to add more, we can add more. But right now there's 8 on the property.
Well, 15,000 square feet. How many would you expect to have 15,000 square feet?
How many hoop houses?
Yeah.
So it's 3,000 per, right, 3,000 per square feet. So it's 5 hoop houses would be the 15,000 square feet amount.
Only 5 hoop houses would
make up the 15,000 square feet.
Okay.
But you're talking substantially more. You were saying how many?
I mean, as far as at the beginning of an at growth, you're probably going to go with a smaller growth plan just to see first is the investment that's involved with a lot larger operation. From what Ron was saying, it could be up to $20 million bucks to start the operations. So, of course, generally we're going to start off on a smaller scale, show that it's a successful model, and then keep growing from there.
And from some of the things that I've seen, I understand it's a lot more expensive and a lot more involved than, just throwing a few seeds in the ground.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot more things that need to be put in place because of what the crop is. So, I mean, it would increase the cost, but at the same time, the price that the market's selling out would be covering that amount. So.
Now, is it true that the lights would be on for 24 hours in hoop houses?
If you were dealing with lights being put into hoop houses, you would add blackout screens on top of the hoop houses as an option to keep the light being projected outside the hoop houses.
Is that commonly done?
I mean, if it was an indoor facility, like a warehousing growth cultivation site, you would definitely have lights. When you have it out in a farm environment, you could go without them. But again, some people would want to put them in just because then you can get the growth happening sooner than later.
But there are blackout options. Even
but you could put, right, you could put a blackout sheet across a hoop house.
Okay.
So
your tax calculation is for the property tax as well as the sales tax?
That number up there?
You were talking about, well.
The $240,000 was just on the sales tax.
And then
cent rate.
Then there would be a property tax.
Then there's a property tax involved as well.
Okay.
So it becomes in addition to.
In addition to the revenue.
Whatever that revenue comes out to be.
Your revenue.
Yeah.
Well, the property tax would be on standard property, not farmland assessed property.
Correct.
Right. So from only the property.
The industrial.
Well, yeah, it would be regular tax on regular property.
Yeah, an industrial.
So they would not get the reduced rate.
Right, exactly.
For the part that they grow on.
Yeah, only the carved out piece that's right. Designated specifically for the cannabis space.
Right.
So the light was one of the questions we had in town here. The other one was the odor. So this would be a cultivation site, not a manufacturing site. Whereas manufacturing, you dry it there and you trim it there and package it there. So this would be cultivation only?
Cultivation only. If it's if the license for a manufacturing option is included in the ordinance change, then it could be done manufacturing on the site as well. Unless it's chosen based on the council to say we'd prefer to have it at a different location.
If that happens, what is the benefit to us?
To the manufacturer? More tax revenue for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Okay, it's almost like you're getting your tax at the cultivation piece, and then you'll get the tax at the manufacturing piece.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Isn't the odor part, though? I know my son's out in Colorado. He says the odor comes from when the plant flowers. Nothing to do with the manufacturing of it.
Oh, so when it's manufactured, that has to be dried.
Well, but before the drying, when it flowers, is when the smell comes.
When it flowers is when it smells.
For a period of time.
Is where it smells, right. After it dries, so.
Well, that was the concern.
Right.
When
so in the process, once it matures, if there's no manufacturing through your facility, would you just chop it down, throw it in the back of the truck, take it off to the manufacturing site? Or how does that work?
I mean, a lot of times you would dry it on site, bag it up, and then you would be providing the pounds over to the manufacturing
so you
site.
Would bag it up as a complete plant, or would you cut the buds off? Or
I mean, more often you'd do the trimming on site.
Well, that's
and then
the manufacturing part.
Manufacturing would be converting it over to like byproducts, like vape cartridges, edibles.
Well, Mike, does your daughter have experience in manufacturing?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay. Well, trimming of the buds, drying of the plants creates an odor. Trimming of the buds, the plants dry. So all of that sounds like you're getting into the manufacturing there also. I would have to look at the specific law about manufacturing.
Sure. Defining on when the product gets sent over to manufacturing versus
right.
the cultivation site.
So
you mean versus cultivation only?
Cultivation only is one license.
Right.
Manufacturing
yeah, growing
is another license.
Right.
Retail
right.
is another license.
Yeah. Right. I'm just
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, I think we need the definition of manufacturing.
Right.
Which She's going to promote.
Yeah. the cannabis, so it's different classes. There's 6 different classes that you can authorize in the The first one is the cultivator, which we were discussing, and then manufacturing is class 2. And that in that stage, you process the cannabis items in your vape purchasing or otherwise using usable cannabis, preparing and packaging items, and then selling. And it's optionally transporting these items to other processors, wholesalers or retailers, but not to consumers.
Right. Okay. So there is a line between... There's a line between cultivation, manufacturing, transportation is another line, retail, and testing, I think, are 5 or 6 of the categories there.
Right. I mean, as far as the testing part, that's not subject to the 2% tax if you had a testing facility.
You'd have to have a state
And I think there's 4 at this time.
Testing facilities.
Right.
So we wouldn't be involved. What we would be looking at here is just cultivation, I believe.
Agriculture, right? Just to grow it.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the options go, I mean, you could look into the manufacturing side. I mean, we're just talking about cultivation since we're trying to help the farmers out.
No, I understand, yeah.
But
as it drifts into manufacturing, therein lies the smell.
Well, does it drift into manufacturing unless
the
you're
odor?
Specifically? Well, no, I think Joe means the whole
process. Well, if you're going to dry it and trim it, that leans towards manufacturing.
I don't think that goes into manufacturing.
No.
I don't think that falls into manufacturing. That's all part of the,
but
the
manufacturing is like then with the byproducts.
Right.
Here, it's just...
From what I've read of the law, and I have read the law, manufacturing is the drying, the trimming, the packaging, and getting it ready to ship out. But we should read those laws in
the Right now, we're not talking about that. We're talking about...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
We're talking about growing it and harvesting.
There's a line between the two, manufacturing and cultivation. So we should be very...
Well, they're 2 separate entities.
So we should know the difference, so...
Well, Christina, do you want to read it again?
Sure. So it's a different class. And I'll read the exact manufacturing thing. Just let me find it. Facilities, this is manufacturer. Facilities involved in the manufacturing, preparation, and packaging of cannabis items. This class is also known as the cannabis processor, and it means any licensed person or entity that processes the cannabis items in the state by purchasing or otherwise obtaining cannabis, manufacturing, preparing, and packaging these items and selling it and optionally transporting it.
So what is the last step in the cultivation?
So it can optionally be the transport, or it doesn't have to be the transport. It could be just the packaging.
Well, the cultivation.
Cultivation.
Oh,
what is
cultivation.
The last? What is the last step?
The cultivation is grows, cultivates, produces, sells, and may transport to other cannabis growers as well. So the transportation, it seems, is the optional portion of both.
But what are you what are you transporting there? That you cut the plant and just take it?
That's what it seems to be. Cultivates, and then you sell it. And then it's manufactured to be whatever type of product it's going to be.
Then the manufacturer would take the raw plant.
Right.
Exactly.
So manufacturing does consist of drying, trimming, packaging, what have you got?
Yeah, and to address the odor concern is, if they're grown in hoop houses, you can get a filtration system.
Odor scrubbers, I think they call them.
If you want to use that term, that's fine. I just can say, like, ultimately you use a filtration system that will kind
noise?
Of... it's just like a fan that would be on the same of hoop house that they use for circulating the air in and out. It's not a loud thing in the filtration system.
Okay.
So what... If we were to agree to this, so there's 2 possibilities. The farmers can strictly cultivate, grow cannabis, or they can, if we approved it, or they could also have a manufacturing license and do that on the premises.
You can do that, yes.
Okay.
What about...
Would that take more footage? more buildings? Sure.
I mean, sure. It would increase the square footage of what you're trying to use for...
Does this plan have the capacity for that? Does this plan have the capacity for both?
Not at this time, but if it was part of the process of putting this into the town, we would definitely look to include that option in.
In the same plots, in the same area.
I mean, I would encourage that from that side, but then there's also other aspects of manufacturing. Like if it's an edible thing you're converting it into, then, I mean, I probably wouldn't be making edibles on the farm. I would find a facility that can make it in town. So it's separate and, of course, sanitized and in a different way than you would have over there on a farm.
Neil, you said a filtration system can be used. Would the council or the governing body be able to put forth their own regulations? Like, for instance, we would want perhaps a filtration system, and then you would have to spend the money on it, or is this all up to you?
I mean, that's where the cannabis committee would kind of have those discussions from the municipality, saying these are the guidelines we'd like to have in place. There's also the CRC guidelines for different areas. So,
okay.
And wouldn't that have to be done through zoning as part of our zoning process?
For the filtration system? Or
to whatever requirements that we'd require for you to... somebody to open a facility, I would imagine that would be addressed in whatever zoning laws be.
We'd have to go through our zoning.
Well, we opted out. So first of all, we have to change the...
Yeah, first of all, we have to change that.
Yeah, and the CRC guidelines has people come down and do the inspection of the facilities to make sure that you're in compliance with their rules and regulations.
But then, if we had regulations of our own as a municipality, we would have to have code enforcement, local code enforcement, to go around and make sure that you're following the code or the regulations that we adopt. Is that correct?
It's correct. The code enforcer would come and make sure that we're in compliance to the rules and regulations. So
now, unlike vegetables, this is a high-value crop.
Right.
And during budding seasons, security might be an issue. What experience have you had with that, and how do you deal with security? Because, you know, I know in California, there's some big security issues.
Yeah, I mean, security would be followed in compliance to the guidelines that the CRC is laying down with what we would need for the entity.
Whose responsibility would security be?
The entities.
The entity. And that would be part of an agreement that we would have for that regulation.
That's within the regulation.
It's within the regulation. Okay.
And if we are unhappy with your security, is there a state override, basically, that says you need X amount of security, 8-foot fences, barbed wire, I don't know.
So what you'll hear from Ron when he comes is talking about, like, the it's an every year is an annual renewal of your license from the town. So if there are concerns of compliance like that, then that's part of before the renewal of the license.
Right.
Would say, look, these are items we want you to address.
Right. So say somebody came and cut through your hoop house and grabbed a couple of plants and ran off into the woods. How does that work?
I mean, first I would hope that wouldn't occur. But, I mean, but the security concerns that would be put in place would be addressing access into the hoop houses, security, get like almost like a fence being put in place, or other things that can be put in place
to
help increase security.
Have you looked those over at all, any of you guys? So you know exactly what the state would require?
At the moment, I didn't look over that area.
Okay. Lawrence, didn't you say that the fences would be situated like far back from the road so you didn't see them?
No, this is Wally's James farm, so it's going to be the second year, the first year. The first year, maybe not, but the second year we're going to move it further back from where they sit now. You can kind of see them from the road now as you go by. You see the frames, they're not covered. So that's the thing, like, the way things are going, being that it's, like, already February, you know, we really need to get going. And so we kind of want to just, like, get it approved and, you know, bring those greenhouses exactly where they're at. They're plug and go. They got the ventilation. So as you were speaking about the filtration, the ventilation is already there. The filtration is what CRC, which is the committee that regulates it, just put these big pads over the back of them, and you're done. It's very simple. And you have to have flow of the air, and then you put these big filters on the back. They're really not that much. It's not a real big deal. And as far as the light, the blackout, these systems, you push a button. Actually, they're done all with photo sensors, but these new systems, just like go, and when you go inside, it would be full sun. You can't see one dot of light, so you guys won't see anything.
So you're talking about using the existing greenhouses. I guess they'd be in back of what the gold farm would be or something like
that? Right now, in Wong's farm, where they sit now, exactly, because we're really short of, like, if they want to succeed this year and have a crop, it's already cut and pushing it, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, then they get experience the first year, the second year, moving back, everything, you know, make everyone happy, separate driveway, keep it away from his, and you know, my place honestly would be more. I have a lot of experience in like layout in my past history, and my job would basically be like, you know, to make it nice for everyone and eye pleasing. It wouldn't be an eyesore, I promise. Okay.
Understood. Now there's on Nurco Road the first culvert that goes through where it's a gabion on the Wong side and. Should be a ditch on the other side, taking the water out to the wetlands and whatnot. So there's a bit of controversy there now, and it has to be addressed. So the State Agricultural Committee, and I've spoken to Wally about this, and a few other people over there, the wash coming off the side and parallel to the road goes to that culvert, and it brings a lot of silt across the road. So that situation cannot be remedied until the wash from the Wong property is remedied. So that could be a hang-up in this.
Well, Joe, if you recall, the council allotted $10,000 towards
that. But that's for the downstream side. We're talking about the silt coming there first, and that would be on the Wong side. So the State Agricultural Committee would love to talk to them about it and remedy that, and I'm just saying, that could be a hiccup in this whole thing. Should we decide, fine, there's still the wash, the silt coming
off. I can address that issue. I have a lot of experience in drainage.
Okay.
So
that should be addressed. That is something that is kind of in the way right now. Okay.
Well, also keep in mind, we'd be adding impervious surface.
Well, the greenhouses are already there. Are they covered?
They're on a pad, right? Are they on a pad of some sort? I mean, it's not ground underneath there.
They're in the ground. Yeah, but we're gonna create like sustainable systems where all the water when they run off the greenhouse, fresh drains on the side. I'm just gonna lay it out for these guys, and I'm going back to organic farming. So I'm just designing the layout for all the water that runs off the house is gonna be collected in fresh drain systems. We're going, you know, save for watering systems.
So there's a few of our committees. The environmental committee would be involved in like impervious surfaces and where does the runoff go and what fertilizers are in the soil. There's a whole thing now about
no
the watershed.
We
organic fertilizers.
There's no fertilizers.
Okay. No phosphates getting added to the system.
We're gonna start off using like ash and try to keep it natural as possible. We really want to use our system. No dig and apply it, you know, to the cannabis. You want to be the first.
There is our environmental committee with its process. Then there is the planning board with its process, and then there is the council there. So we have to tie all this together. We were talking about this last year, and my suggestion was we should have a cannabis committee to study this. We have other towns that we know have allowed it, and they have their own resolutions already in place. We could do this, but we need a committee to study the situation.
Well, I just wanted, you know, since the last meeting was on Zoom and we had sent out the flyer to the residents, and then,
November.
You know, I've heard from the farmers, and so I thought it was time to start a discussion,
okay.
general discussion
okay.
and presentation.
Would be nice if the council was involved in stuff like that, because
the council
I was already at a town meeting with the state talking
yeah,
about
it. Yeah, no, I know that meeting. No, I just thought...
Know, so.
The farmers had come to me, and so I thought, let's start again, since we're in person, have a presentation, have a discussion with the farmers, and then move on from there.
Okay.
Appoint,
could we put a committee together?
Yeah, we should
somebody
have
somebody from
absolutely.
The planning board, somebody from environmental, maybe a couple of council people. So before we leave tonight, maybe we could do that, because you want to expedite this, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And the only way to expedite it is for us
well,
to make it.
I think we want to put a little thought into the composition
yeah.
of the committee to make sure that all the different stakeholders are represented
yeah,
on that committee.
And a couple of farmers also, yeah.
Yeah, and farmers and, yeah. and all, to make sure we have good representation.
Interested parties.
Yeah, right. That's right. But I think we do need a committee, too.
Yeah.
Very good.
Just with the water issue, we have a limited water and water problems with this, water sewage problems. What do you anticipate? The water, the tower that we have is enough to,
we're not touching that water.
You're not touching.
They run
wells.
Okay.
Plus, we're using like very low flow drip system, so it's very sustainable. It goes into the soil, not.
Yeah. Okay.
So Mr. Gade is not here tonight, but he's on board. It's one of the three farms.
Would this be an organic product?
Yeah.
Could it be certified organic?
Oh no. I honestly, we use nothing, but it's because the model that we have is like educating our customers by having the connection with them coming to the farm to pick up their vegetables. So for the feed that I do on my size and my scale, it's not worth paying $5,000 a year just to have this name.
Right.
For me,
but essentially it would be an organic.
Right.
Yeah, it's
without
the
stamp on it.
Yeah, right.
But it would be organic without just the official.
It's medicinal
stamp.
Medicinal grade.
I'm sure they have issues where the crop isn't moving for some reason. That we call in an expert and they may say it needs like 2% nitrogen or something. Then they may have. But we're, as far as like pesticides and things like that, we like to just keep. I know you can't use herbicides and things on cannabis. So
on a collection side, who harvest? I mean, the farmer would harvest. Who weighs the plants out? Who reports it to the state? How does all of that work? The allocation of 2% tax.
So the tax collector in town. Right.
One.
So the tax collector in town can come in and validate the numbers for the tax revenue.
So are all of the plants going to have barcodes on them?
I mean, we would tag them. I mean, if we want to do barcodes, we can.
That required by the state? Or?
I mean, I'm not sure if it's barcoding, but just
they've got to follow the plant from seed to final destination.
Right.
So you guys would have to do something in order to facilitate that process.
I mean, we would tag the plants just so that we know which plant is from the harvest so that you can... track back for recall purposes.
Now, who from us would come to you and say, oh, you got 5,000 pounds here, and validate that? Do we do that? Do you bring it to us? Do we go to you?
I mean, the entity would report it, and then if the town wanted to check the numbers, they can come and check the numbers.
So we would have to be wise enough to know that this plant here weighs like 5 pounds. You get 5 pounds out of a plant?
No.
Okay.
You get less.
You get 1 pound out of a plant?
I mean, you're hoping 1 pound. I mean, and, of course, if you're in California and they grow outdoors, you do get a bigger yield.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's something I had talked about to you guys last year was the idea of possibly having some outdoor growth.
You're talking 1 pound after trimming.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so how many plants can you get into one greenhouse?
About 300. Five feet generally 5 foot diameter. What's that?
Bonsai bushes.
Well, you would just essentially a 5 foot square foot per plant,
right,
for when it's in full growth. But prior to that, I mean, you can have a lot more plants at this when they're seedlings.
Is that like a 5 foot square, 25 square feet? You're saying per plant?
Five square feet
or 5 foot square?
5 square feet.
So five foot square is like two foot by two foot. Yeah. A little bit.
Sorry.
Yeah,
it's 5 foot apart. 5 feet apart.
Okay, so you're talking 25 square feet per plant, basically.
Yes.
So out of a 3,000 foot greenhouse, does that work? 300 plants in there?
One row would be 25 plants, right? 5 feet apart.
Hold on. Sorry, I always have to redo it. So hold on. It's 120 plants per greenhouse on 3,000 square feet.
120 plants, pound of plants, 120 pounds per greenhouse. Talking like how many greenhouses together?
If you do five for the 15,000, that's 600.
600 pounds.
Pretty good production.
That's worth 12 million.
Yeah, if you do, it's actually comes. I mean, it, in that math, it's 9 million.
It's what?
It would be potentially 9 million in revenue, but it's also depending on what the price per pound you're selling at. Which, as demand goes up, might bring the price down.
So you guys would have all of that worked out and really on paper that we could understand instead of throwing these questions at you. It would be like a real business plan sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's in one sense, for me, it's if the town's not changing the ordinance, that those we would work those numbers right after that comes into play, because then the entity has to present for approval from the town. For the letter of approval.
So at this point, we're just talking about the Wong farm. We're not talking about your farm. We're not talking about Reddy's farm.
No, we're talking about all three.
Well, we're talking about X amount of greenhouses.
Yeah, so right now we're talking about the Wong's house. It's a non-preserved farm.
Right.
There has been questions coming up on a preserved farm that we're looking into addressing with the state as far as if those farms are eligible.
Because all three are interested, right?
All three farmers are interested for sure.
if we say yes to the ordinance in any form, we're not making yes to one farm.
Oh, no, of course not. No. I just meant there's some question about preserve farm.
Right,
so we don't have a definitive answer about that yet.
Right.
But I know. So we'll start with the non-preserved, but then, eventually we'll find out what the state.
Well, currently you can't do it on preserved farmland. Is that correct?
You can do it, but the tax protection disappears then.
Got it.
Okay.
It's not the public yet.
Let me throw one more thing out. As a council and as a committee, once we do a committee, do we go for one license or three licenses?
Well, I think the committee first needs to decide if we even want to change our ordinance. The ordinance says we've opted out.
Right.
So I think the first item on the agenda of the committee should be, do we want to go forward and change the ordinance? And then we can get into all the specifics.
Because we do have the option of how many licenses.
Yeah.
Okay. There would be additional tax.
But all of what we're discussing goes to that question of do we want to allow it or not.
Right.
So
right.
We have to do all that first.
Right.
Work out all the details and any concerns we have.
We have to get permission from the council.
The first thing to decide is if we want to come back in.
Am I right in thinking that our restrictions we put on it can be more restrictive than the state laws, but not less.
That's correct. Right. And you can restrict in many different ways that take into consideration the zoning requirements of the borough, and that would also account for odor concerns and school
Everything. We would be creating a law.
Would we do that, or would the planning board do that and then come back to the council?
Well, it depends on what process you put in place and what further restrictions you do. You're allowed to create your own process of what the application process is going to be if you're going to have the planning board take care of that, or you can do, like Councilman suggested, and create some sort of control committee for cannabis that will then, you know, look into the zoning requirements and make sure they meet whatever the borough has put in place, and then pass a resolution that would then come to the council.
Okay. Now, an ordinance, remember, if you're going that route, takes two readings, and in between, your ordinance has to go to your planning board for them to review to make sure it's consistent or not.
So
do we also need a public? So it's not in 2 weeks.
Right.
Do we also need a public meeting about it also?
Like well, that's the second
public
hearing on the ordinance.
The public hearing is on the second
and
reading.
It's likely
of the
that the master plan would have to be reviewed and changed because it's not in the current master plan.
No, not at all.
It's not, but they might find it consistent or not. I don't know what that part.
Yeah.
Well, agricultural land, it could possibly fit right into it,
right.
But that's to be discussed.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Our first priority is to form a committee and decide whether or not we want to move ahead with allowing it.
Do you want to form that point?
Yeah. I was just going to ask if any of the other farmers or anyone like directly involved had anything they wanted to say or ask. No? Okay. All right. Okay. So let's put a committee together.
I'd like to be on the committee.
So would I. Well, we should have someone from environmental, someone from planning.
I think maybe we ought to take a little more time to consider all the different groups in town that would be affected by this school.
Yeah, I was going to say the school next. No, I know.
Yes, we can't really.
Aren't you the rep to the school board?
Maybe. I haven't been to a school board meeting.
But
not recently.
Make a suggestion.
Yeah.
I would suggest that if you want to pass a resolution, a standing resolution, because it's not on the agenda, that you pass a resolution to form the committee and then appoint the members at the next meeting so you can give proper public notice.
Okay.
And they take those considerations.
And also at the next meeting, the Ron Mondello?
No. Next meeting is February 21st. Ron will not be here till March 6th. Which is the meeting after next. He is on the Cannabis Regulatory Committee, Commission of Jersey City, but he's sent to the different towns to make presentations by the League of Municipalities. So he's not pro or con. He's just going to give us all an overview.
So he's with the CRC.
Of Jersey City. And then, but the League of Municipalities chose him to go to the different towns and present the information.
We know other local people that are related to us that are on their local committees and have created their own.
Well, this is what he does. The League of Municipalities sends him out, and he made a presentation recently to Hightstown, and that's what he does. So he's the authority somewhat on this.
I think that one of the concerns that a lot of community members have expressed to me about this is concern that it would change the character of the community in some significant way, either with security issues, if there are private security guards who have to be riding around patrolling with guns and that kind of. I've heard a lot of concerns about, in essence, changing the spirit of place of the community, because now all of a sudden we have a high value problem. We may have people looking to take some of their crop and also casing out houses in the community. These are the concerns that a lot of the people have expressed to me.
Let me follow up on that.
Yeah.
Okay. I've known people that have had experience in growing outdoor crop. Very good experience with it. By the same token, they have been disrupted by men walking through the woods with guns. Okay, and here we're surrounded by a preserve and woods. And there's nothing out of the ordinary to see somebody walking around the woods with a gun here.
Especially not during budding season, which also happens to correspond with hunting season.
Right about the same time. So when I say if somebody took bolt cutters, went through the fence, took a knife, grabbed a couple of plants, that's a high-value crop. They could run back into the woods. The state police aren't going to run after them. That's our police here. You're not going to run after him. I don't think Larry Lawrence will either here.
I'll run after him.
Okay. All right, well, good
he
for
will
you.
Run after him.
Good for you. But our concern is, I mean, we have houses that border the woods, and there are sheds in our backyards, tool sheds, garden sheds. So if somebody did pinch a few and ran with them, they could lay out in one of our sheds until morning, and then we come out to water the flowers or whatever. And
Neil, do you have crime statistics?
Not in the state, since it's pretty much new crop being grown. We don't have those stats coming back yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as much as the obstacles that we're trying to overcome, they're also anticipating things like that. And how do you...
Done by us, they could park by the sewer plant and run through the woods across the field from Wally's and come out to the sewer plant and tune them out, and if the road's blocked, they could run to the backyards of somebody. It's like there is an honest assessment.
Here's another concern, too. This is bordering Millstone Township.
Yeah.
They're not getting any tax revenue from this that I'm aware of, or at least I can't imagine they are. It's a Roosevelt thing.
Mm-hmm.
They, however, have residences, pretty expensive residences that back up or right near there, communities there.
Yep.
They will be affected by odor.
Mm-hmm.
They may be affected by odor. They may be affected by lighting. They may get all the downside effects and no tax revenue out of it.
Right.
So if I were them and living in a house in Millstone near there, I would consider suing the municipality. If some of those things get out of hand.
Gentlemen and ladies.
I don't think you can.
They'd have to come to a meeting and say their objection to the to us.
Hold on. The nuclear waste issue here?
Yeah.
And they came to that meeting, believe me. They were worried about the property.
Okay. Well, if they didn't
come to the meeting.
And they wouldn't get any revenue from it.
Madam Mayor, I think what we're doing now is we're behaving like a committee.
Yeah,
and I don't think this is that's the issue.
I mean,
right,
obviously, there's so many different opinions in town. There are people
who
are fervently in favor of the farms. There are people who are against it.
A good outline of some of the issues that we need to explore further in the committee. You're right.
Well, once you get into the committee, then you could do it. You're spinning your wheels right now.
Also, but Christina, can we be sued for growing because it's legal? Could Millstone, someone from Millstone?
So just like if you're doing something with your building, you send letters out to your local neighbors in a certain distance to get their feedback.
Well, they would get the ordinance first reading and a notice of when the public hearing is.
So, I mean, you can address it like that where you're sending notices to the people in specific area that said this is happening, and if you want to speak out, come to the meeting.
But could someone file a lawsuit against the town?
I mean, I think if you did that as a step, then that's the basis for the ability to avoid that situation from occurring.
And as long as you take the proper steps to make it legal in Roosevelt, then it would depend on what the cause of action is for the lawsuit. But as far as it being legal or not, the borough would be protected for that.
Okay.
One thing has nothing to do with the
other. Let's say they had a problem with the smell. Would they sue the town and the business, or would they sue the business?
I think that would be a litigation strategy. I don't know exactly what they would do. It would most likely be a tort for some sort of infringement on their enjoyment of their property, but whether that would be successful is,
possible.
But it would be legal costs involved on the borough's part.
Well, if someone could sue the town for anything that happens,
right.
I'm not saying that
it's just something that I'm not saying that, that could stop it. I'm just saying that's something we need to consider. There may be legal costs or maybe defense costs.
That falls into the committees.
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap this up. We can appoint a committee at the next meeting, February 21st, which is a Tuesday because of President's Day. Anyone who has an interest in being on the committee can just let me know. And as I said at the meeting after, on March 6th, Ron Mondello will be here, and he can provide more information for us, additional information, and perhaps be able to answer some of our questions or respond to our concerns in a little more depth. Okay? Thank you for coming.
Thanks for all your information.
And thank you guys for coming out.
Before they leave, since you cut out the public, they stay public. On the agenda.
Well, no, the public comment is coming up next.
Yeah.
Ask them. Ask them. Okay. So I'm going to open the floor for public comment at 8:12 p.m.
For agenda items only.
Is there anyone from the public who Maureen would like to speak?
Can you
put it on?
Can you turn it on?
I'll do it.
Okay. Just bring it all the way up to the light.
Click.
Okay, Maureen Parrott, 2 Tamara Drive, Roosevelt. I didn't even realize that was on the agenda tonight, but I'm glad it was. But the question that I wanted to ask was about truck traffic, about the marijuana, is how many trucks and how often, and who would patrol to make sure they're not driving 65 miles an hour like everybody else does on Route 571?
Oh,
how many trucks to...
Once you cultivate the cannabis?
Right, somebody has to move it.
Depending on the poundage that you have, I assume it's one or two trucks, not much.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they're out of town. They're not coming through town.
And they're not coming through town, right?
The chances are
they're
going
to go in and come back out.
They'll never come into town.
Twice here. Okay, that was just the only other question that I had about. Okay. I have a couple things.
Twice a year or once a year? Yeah. If you're harvesting after cold grow or you're doing faster grows, two grows a year.
Well, hopefully you'll have a lot of good harvest if you wind up.
Hopefully we'll all have good harvest,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to briefly comment about the aerial spraying of poison. I would hope that you could exempt the properties that have been on the no spray list.
This is the aerial
mosquito poison. And I personally would hope that you vote against that. I don't suspect you're going to, based on what the council did previously. But I would ask, I did get on a no spray list, so how would that work if they're doing aerial?
It would be.
No, they just give you notice so that you cover up anything that you wouldn't want, you know.
This is not the spraying that we had questions.
This is not the West Vial.
This is the West Nile.
General mosquito.
It's been done every year since I lived here.
Oh, all right. That was the question I
thought. You see, nobody died.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting? Nobody died.
Okay.
Nobody's died in this town.
Not the men.
Was the traffic calming issue. And I have a lot of questions. The first one is, when are Pine and Tamara going to be repaved?
24, right?
Does anybody know that?
The first part of Pine might be this year, later, or after the...
I thought it was 24.
It's next year, or even later.
Because Carmella hasn't even finalized.
We're just in the initial stages of engineering.
Yeah.
yeah. engineering planning.
So there's going to be no repaving in 23?
I don't think so.
No. I wouldn't 100% say
yeah,
that.
We don't think so. I'll ask.
Okay, find out. Does that involve timing of whatever is going to be involved? Okay, and the second point is that I did read the engineer's letter saying $10,000 per speed hump. I think that was sounded extremely excessive to me, given that the Federal Highway Transportation website traffic calming e-primer gives prices for every traffic calming, and they have a range of $2,000 to $4,000 per hump. So $10,000 sounded excessive. Plus, I don't know why the borough engineer would be estimating, since we just put speed humps in on farm. We should know exactly how much they cost when the road's being repaved. And I would think they're cheaper when you're repaving than if you're adding.
But is that installed $2,000 to $4,000 per hump?
Yeah. That was the federal government. Right, but get it in black and white. What did it cost?
Well, but the costs have gone up.
Yeah, dramatically.
Since they did last year?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Dramatically.
Well, we could get the actuals on what that was last year.
Well, I have to go by what she's estimating.
But, Maury?
I don't go by what she's estimating because I trust the federal government over the borough engineer, to be honest with you.
I don't think that's fair to say.
Well, that's my view.
Okay, let's see.
Let me just say it's hard because when contractors do bids, they estimate the total cost of the job and they move money around inside the bids for a number of reasons. One is so not everybody knows their unit prices for everything they're doing, and another is to game the system. So if there's something that they think isn't going to get installed, they'll move that money out of that item and into another item. So you can't just take a look at like what last year's bid was and say that's the actual cost, because it won't be correct. So you really, now engineers' estimates tend to run to the high side because they never want to give a price that's lower, and all of a sudden somebody comes back and says, you told me it was going to be $5,000, it cost me $10,000. So you can't just pull the number out of last year's bid documents and say this is it, because the contractor, when he bid the job, he moved money around.
But we could still get the number. There may be all nuances on it, but we could get it.
Yeah, you can come up with that.
But
Carmella knows pretty well.
I'd like to know if the engineer, if she's a member of the Institute of Transportation Engineers. That's one question I have. Is she a member? Does anyone know that?
It's doubtful.
Okay, that was a question I had. I don't know if council members are aware, some of them may be, that there was within the past month an accident on Tamara Drive that involved at least two cars, a tree, a bush, and somebody's yard. So that's my main issue for talking about traffic calming. There was an accident. Well, it was at night.
It was erratic driving by a driver who really.
I don't think it was night, because I saw the pictures and it was daylight.
It was 6:30 in the evening.
But the driver was, I don't know how to say it, incapacitated. Should not be driving.
So nothing to do with speeding.
No.
Well, we don't know that if it was or wasn't, because I looked at the damage and I thought it was looked like it was speeding, the degree of damage to the vehicles, but we don't know. But an accident
we actually do know, because the person that caused the accident is having pretty significant medical problems. And so if it was speeding, it wasn't because they were actually speeding purposely, but they're having significant medical problems.
I understand.
And they're, people are... There's being action taken to try to take the driver's license away.
Well, that's...
But it wasn't just... I think someone categorized it as a fender bender. There was a major crash and then subsequent fender benders.
Right. Yeah. Well, the person, I'm not going to say who it is, that person does speed, because the person drives past my house and I see that person
still be driving much longer.
Well, I'm just saying the person does speed. I know that for a fact because I've seen it many, many, many times speeding. But anyway, and as we talked about lawsuits, if someone is hit, and this council, as I put in my letter, I kind of alluded to this vaguely, but if a person is hit by a car that's traveling over 25, I would suspect that person's going to sue the borough because I know this is the fourth time I've brought it to the attention of the borough that it's dangerous. And there is a New Jersey Tort Claims Act, and the borough's, I think, generally, the person would argue that the borough did not respond reasonably to a known danger. So just defending a lawsuit, even if it were ultimately we won it, that's going to cost a lot more than traffic calming, I believe. And I'm just saying that because of the number. People are saying it costs money. Lawsuits cost money, too.
Mrs. Parrott, I lived here 61 years. I've spent time on the council, on the planning board, and many other boards. I have never heard of the borough being sued for something like that.
Well, that doesn't mean maybe they didn't ask me about it.
Listen to me. And we have had accidents in the borough. A couple of days ago. I'm not aware of it. I wasn't aware of it. It was not the first one we've had. We've had the misfortune of having a woman who was under the influence of medical problem and under the influence of medical drugs, prescription drugs, and she lost control of her car one day, lost the sunshine and whatever, and we had a tragedy. We lost three children. As you may know, maybe.
Yeah, it was in front of my house.
Nobody sued anyone.
I understand. That doesn't mean it wouldn't happen.
Let's not go nuts on this.
Well, all I'm saying is that doesn't mean it wouldn't happen because it is. It's a danger.
That balloon could have come down on Roosevelt, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, if I get hurt, you better be prepared. I'll put it that way. Yeah. That's all I can say about that. But I think I still think it's cheaper to do traffic calming. And I think, why do you think municipalities do traffic calming?
Because many municipalities are not doing it.
They're not doing it. Actually,
they're taking it away.
Did you read the letter from one of the residents opposing speed humps? And then I subsequently spoke to the Millstone Fire and First Aid Departments. They're adamantly against it. They're adamantly opposed to speed humps. You didn't read the letter? It's on the website.
I saw the letter last time.
Well, there's no speed. Only one street in Old Millstone has speed humps. There's no speed humps in Millstone because there's opposing view that they're a real impediment to the ambulances and the fire trucks getting to people quickly enough. They have to come to a full stop at each hump and then start again. So it's bad for the actual vehicle, and then also they lose a lot of time. They've calculated how much time is lost, not just Millstone, in general. The first responders know how much time they lose. Also, it's detrimental, as I said, to the vehicle. They also brought up, which I had never thought of, but snow plows, when we haven't had snow this year, but in general, when the plow people are out, they can't see the humps. They smash into them. It damages the blades, but also has caused whiplash and headaches and other, you know, from being jolted like that, the drivers of the plow trucks. So many municipalities don't have them because they feel that they're, and also, let's face it, in the culture today, there's many people who don't care about a hump, and if they have a big SUV or a pickup truck or something like that, they just...
What we're really discussing here is how to protect pedestrians from getting hit.
Right.
And there's a number of ways to do it. Speed bumps are one of the options. There's many varieties of speed bumps, and that certainly is an option, and we've used it in town. But there are other options that Maureen Parrott also suggested. What about sidewalks? And encouraging people, I mean, let's face it, streets are made for cars. Not really designed for pedestrian safety, that we know. However, there are things you can do to create safe passage for pedestrians, walking areas to the side or sidewalks. And we don't have adequate sidewalks along Pine Drive either.
And that's not—is that something that would happen here? I don't think.
I don't know, because people will still say, "Hey, I like walking in the street," and I don't blame them for that. It's
a actually, I saw a really interesting documentary where streets were designed for people to walk in, and then once cars were invented, whatever, you know, with the advent of cars,
but
the car industry pushed to make jaywalking.
But I think we ought to focus not on one particular solution, but maybe on multiple solutions in how to protect pedestrians from getting severely injured. You don't have a chance if you're against a car. Yeah. And it's just you. I mean, people get there's so many fatalities from pedestrians getting hit by cars, especially in cities, but still.
It's a different environment altogether. Yeah.
Well, it is. There's a lot more people, too.
Certainly a different environment.
Yeah. But some of the areas...
If you follow the news...
Some of the streets here are dark.
If you follow the news, many of them are done by trucks and buses that are turning.
You're right.
And you don't know whether the bus had the right of way or the... Or the pedestrian had the right of way.
Yeah.
But if you walk through New York, and I was in New York for many years,
yeah.
Let me tell you something. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
And does.
And also, I've mentioned this before, but I think we're in, much as it pains me to say this, but I think we're in for a rude awakening because we have adventure crossing opening. Which
but that's 571. No, we're dealing with the streets that are
It's all still, people get lost. And then they make real quick turns down Homestead, Pine, Brown, because all of a sudden they realize, wait a minute, this is like, where am I?
And if you have a water main break, they get detoured through town.
Exactly. Also, you know, it's in the plans for Millstone. They're putting up a huge affordable housing complex. And I kept hearing that it wouldn't go through, it wouldn't go through, the DEP would never approve it. But meanwhile, there's vehicles back there, and all, it looks like they're going through with at Ely's Corner, a gigantic affordable housing complex, and there's just no way that's not going to bring even more traffic into Roosevelt. And it's true, they go down 571. However, most people, once they get sort of past the school or before the school, like it doesn't look like a highway. It doesn't look like it's a route that would take them to their destination. So they slam on their brakes and make these crazy turns. Someone on Brown Street a couple of years ago contacted me because his grandson had, I mean, you know, Brown Street's this big, and his grandson had chased a ball across the street onto a little patch of grass, and a car screeched on its brakes on 571 and went careening down Brown, and he really thought he was going to just watch his grandson get killed in front of him. So even though, yes, it's 571, they turned down our streets. And so I don't even know, you know, I've contacted the county and GPS, but I think we're in for a horror show of the kind of traffic that's going to come in from the affordable housing and from adventure crossing.
Who's our safety committee chair?
I wholeheartedly agree, Mayor, that 571 is a nightmare. They won't even stop for you in the crosswalk, and they're going 65 miles an hour.
They hit the crossing
bar. But I didn't think we, the borough, could do anything legally to control it. But we can do it on the streets, provided it complies with New Jersey law. And I don't know if anybody even read what I sent, but there is trap cushions, speed cushions, allow emergency vehicles to pass without stopping. Mayor, did you mention emergency speed cushions? Have spaces, there's space for emergency vehicles to not have to. They go on the road. There's a space, but their cars, they're not spaced for a car. A car has to go over the speed cushion.
Don't they have to be moved
for
plowing? You can't keep them there.
Mike gave me a copy of that.
And so who will move these? And
well, I don't know, but Princeton, as I said in my letter, Princeton just installed eight of them.
Asbury Park does.
They do? Okay.
Yeah, they take them up.
One at a time.
Yeah, and if I could get a chance, because Princeton just, the newspaper article that I cited and gave the citation to in the Princeton packet, they bought eight speed cushions for $13,700, not $10,000 a speed cushion. And that was another thing. I was very disturbed that our engineer didn't give alternatives but I thought she sounded biased. That's just my opinion, without giving alternatives that would be less costly than that. But there are speed cushions. They can be permanent or temporary. So there are alternatives. There are alternatives not even to constructing sidewalks, as I put in there, that they can have a barrier on the side of the road that's maybe that, maybe a foot high or less than a foot high, that creates a walking lane right on the road. And that does two things. It narrows the road, which people perceive they should go more slowly on a narrower road, and it gives pedestrians a place.
And what does a snowplow do?
They don't get plowed by the snowplow. It's like a sidewalk. The snowplows don't go on a sidewalk.
Well, also, all of this is contingent on the county giving approval. I know Monmouth County is very strict, and many things that we want to do, we're not permitted.
They don't have to approve in the borough. Approve 571. I'm talking about.
I wanted to look into like a gazebo type traffic calmer and right by the post office. But
exactly. That's another alternative. Like I said, the federal government e-primer from the Federal Highway Administration has all this stuff on there. And then, and one of the things is what they call them islands, medians. They can even have gigantic planters in the middle of the road. They can have there's so many methods. That's why I was just really very disturbed that the engineer didn't give any alternatives whatsoever. But there is a December 2022 Institute for Transportation Engineers. I cited this in my letter. They just published traffic calming book, and it costs $150. If the borough could buy that, I think we could afford that. And then I would urge that we have a meeting. The most well-attended meeting that I've ever been at in Roosevelt since I've lived here was Isaac Mendez, chair of the planning board. He had our streets. It was in the school, and it was totally packed. People care about this stuff. I'm not the only. People don't like to talk at meetings. I've talked to so many residents who've complained about speeding. They don't like to come to meetings and talk. I don't. That's personality. I don't mind it. But I am not the only person that is scared about this and thinks it's important. So I would urge.
I think everyone is.
I think everybody's. Yeah, anything that I've. You know, a lot of the ideas that you presented were, and I've read them also online and what different towns have done. A lot of them don't fit our town, is what I saw.
Right.
Trying to put in barriers on the side of the road is causing drainage problems, where the water has to drain to, right now it drains on both sides of the road. So I don't think we can do that.
No, they wouldn't be on the drain.
No, they wouldn't be on the drain, but they would.
It's a removable barrier.
Well, anything removable, who was going to remove these things?
Right. They don't have to be removed.
Well, why
bother with removing them?
Wait, they wouldn't affect draining. They're not anywhere near the drains.
But they stop the water from flowing.
They stop the water from flowing on the road. How would they?
The speed cushions is one thing.
Right. Now
and they're not
the
supposed to be over the drains. The barrier would be, here's the edge of the road, right here, this curve. The barrier would be...
What kind of barrier is this?
It's on Traffic Logic. The website has it. It's about that high, and it creates essentially a sidewalk on the road, a little barrier, so that the cars don't go over it.
It looks like we're super on-street parking.
Well, you'd have to have parking on one side.
I guess if you care about
pedestrians, you got to make changes. That's the point. If you care about pedestrians,
a lot of these changes, I don't think that's not going to fly. I think,
and also Maureen, but everyone cares about safety here, and obviously we have a real problem with speeders. But there are, as you said, not everyone comes to meetings, but many people have also expressed opposition to speed humps for all these other reasons.
Speed humps aren't the only thing. That's why I said there's a lot. I mean, I would urge that we have a committee meeting that's open and published on this issue, on the issue, and that you first buy that book so that people can look at the book. That is what I don't see how we couldn't say we couldn't afford $150 to buy a traffic calming.
Do you think you should create an ad hoc committee and see how many people can
Well,
I think the council.
If you authorize me, I'll pick people on it. Sure.
The council has the power to create an ad hoc committee.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. That's fine.
And we can do that. Any council person or the mayor can have an ad hoc committee.
No, I think every possibility should be looked at. But I think what I have found so far is that everything has a plus side and a downside. So you're going to get opinions on both sides no matter what kind of committee you have.
Right.
So, right.
Of course, that's true. But I don't know, do we have the opinion that says we want speeding?
It's not that simple. No matter what you do.
Well, to me it is. So, having been hit by a car, it's real simple. A 5% chance of death if they're going 20 miles an hour, 85% chance if they're going 40.
We know. We've had deaths in town.
Well, I'm
we
just saying it again. 5% chance if they're going 20, 85% chance at 40. And this isn't me. This is New Jersey Safe Routes to School. This isn't me giving this statistic. That's the statistic.
Yeah, I don't think we disagree with that.
I think what's going to happen is we're going to come up with something that is reasonable. It may include a combination of some of these speed speed cushions, something like that, which I can see has some flexibility to it for emergency vehicles. It solves that issue that the other resident brought up and Millstone Fire that, what about emergency vehicles? Well, they can get through on these and you don't have to worry about that. But that's only part of it. There are other things that we can do as well, but I think it is an important issue, and you're right. Isaac, when he had that meeting, it was packed. Everybody was very interested.
But what came out of that?
You know, come on.
12 by 12 opinions and nothing was done.
No, a lot of things got started with that.
Because Isaac resigned from the planning as the chair of the planning board. Isaac was not a do nothing. Isaac was a do something person.
I understand.
And he actually had that meeting because when I found out he was chair, I went to his house and talked to him like I'm talking to you. And his response was that meeting. The council's response is do nothing. So I'm asking you to do something.
Right.
That's all I'm asking. And I don't think that's a lot to ask. I really don't.
Has any of you ever driven a truck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have.
Have you?
Yeah.
Tractor?
Not
bus?
No.
Have you ever driven a bus?
No, I haven't.
Let me tell you something. When you see one of those pumps, it's not like driving a car. That wheel has to be straight, and you have to aim into those holes. Let me tell you something. You're smoking something. You think you're going to get everybody to do this. There are going to be all kinds of problems. And Princeton is going to find that out. Let me tell you something. I drove a school bus for several years after I retired. And there's a community in East Windsor that's right off Main Street on the right side of the road. You can verify it. They put on half a dozen speed bumps. And we were required to go over the speed bumps. We did it for 2 days. We told the boss that we're not going in there anymore. First of all, we can't keep the schedule. The buses bounce around, jostle the kids, all this. She called up and said, the buses are not going in there. You come get the kids in the street, on Main Street. The next day, the speed bus were gone.
Okay, well, let's wrap this up. So,
Could we get two things to buy that book? I would like something to come of this. To authorize $150 to buy the Institute of Transportation Engineers December, and they're trying to take care of
this. Maureen, we will, when it comes
well,
to...
Well, I didn't get a chance to talk. It was everybody else on the council.
No, I think you did.
I don't think I did.
I think you did, but...
Well, not anywhere near as much. But could we get that
well,
and get a
we'll
committee?
We'll wait till new business, and then we'll bring it up as new business.
Okay.
If we
all right, thank
that.
You. And next time, then, if you're concerned about time, then I would ask that the council not take up the public time. That's all. If you're concerned about time...
Well, we're trying to respond to your concerns.
Well, a lot of these comments didn't respond to my concerns at all.
Where were you?
Okay, is there anyone else in the public who would like to come up and speak about agenda items only? Mary?
Mary Tullis, 21 Lake Drive. I wasn't going to talk about speed bumps, but actually... I came to the council a long time ago when Lake Drive was being paved and straightened, and I asked for speed bumps to be put there, and I'm very glad I did. It's a very straight road. People fly down that road, so I think it's something to consider. And, yeah, okay. Well, I just wanted to say that I know Lawrence and Heidi have devoted themselves to providing people in Roosevelt and outside with the best food, healthiest grown, and it's very much appreciated. And I'm sure Mr. Wong does too. I don't know him. But even so, you need to do your due diligence in investigating the cannabis growing. It's not like when I first heard about it, I thought it was an outdoor cultivation. Farmers are going to be growing it. It's not that kind of thing. It's in greenhouses, and you were calling them hoop houses.
Yep.
So I guess they're an enclosed greenhouse. Are they paved on the bottom? Are they
paved?
No. That kind of thing? So you can move them around?
Yes.
Okay. And while Lawrence and Heidi would do their best, I know, to have the most environmentally friendly growing, like you were describing, Lawrence, with... how you would be just delivering the smallest amount of water necessary for the plant and all that kind of thing. But how would we know that the other farmers would be doing the same thing? Like, is this entity setting rules for all three farmers or however many farmers are involved? Will there be best practices for...
I mean, that would be best practice.
For, so all so you would enforce or the company would enforce it?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay.
It's in their interest to do that.
Pardon?
It's in their interest to do that, to enforce it and to do it. Because
you would think.
They know that water is scarce.
You would think so. Yeah.
Okay.
But I would think the committee would want to see also, like, drawings for the properties, where the greenhouse is going to go, new roads are going to be put in, that would be impervious coverage probably, where are those going to be?
Why don't we let...
Can I have a chance? I'm saying things that I think the committee should involve themselves with. Okay? I think a visit to a currently operating farm would be a great idea. I mean, see what it's like, what's happening there, how many people are working there, what does it look like to have a lot of greenhouses on the farmland and that kind of thing. I mean, there would be a lot of things to take a look at, and a lot of things probably are still undecided about how you're going to do it. But I would like to be on the committee, and I'm on the Environmental Commission, so anyway.
Take that into consideration.
Okay. And one other question. I thought I heard something about the license is renewed every year, so...
It's a revenue-generating potential, just like a liquor license, so it's something that the township should consider.
So
they also then make sure that the entities are in compliance that are within the...
So if the town decided that, it really is a problem with, I don't know, however the cannabis is smelling or something like that, they could decide that, next year we are not renewing your contract? Is that how it works?
It's not a contract, it's a license
right.
The borough gives out. The contract
is... So a license could be taken away at the end of...
Or not renewed, no, not taken away, but not renewed.
You know. Say yes.
It's like a liquor license. You can put conditions on it.
Yes.
That are established prior to...
I don't know if you could do about...
rescinding it. I don't know if we can rescind it.
Regarding smell.
It sounds kind of risky for a business operator then to to set everything up and then, you could tell me next year I can't have my...
Yeah, and if I were a business entity, I would want a longer than 1 year lease on it.
Well, a liquor license is annual, so...
I'm just saying what I would want.
We requested it, but the state granted it, not us.
Right, it's a state license.
Anyway, did you want to say something, Chris?
Sorry, yeah, I'm definitely not an expert within that, but like a liquor license, so the license would be through the state. What we would have to follow would be Roosevelt's protocols, and if we were not in compliance, then it could be revoked. But it's not something that, point, can't be arbitrarily, now we don't think it's good. We would have to not be following whatever agreements and ordinances.
If the town decided that they wanted to rescind the license, it's a long process that's involved with the state, and the state ultimately makes the decision to rescind it or maintain it.
And it's also not clear, and I guess the committee will try to look at this, is how certain regulations or things that the planning board might put on as a restriction, can those really be enforced? Or what sort of rules can the town put on the business owners, really?
That's
the farmers.
The planning board...
Yes, but I'm just saying...
The planning board...
With the state involved to be able to give us the true meaning of the words in these laws. As laws go, every word makes a difference.
Yeah.
So we need the state to give us guidance there.
Right.
Planning board...
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Mondello has a lot of information.
Yeah.
Nothing he has received, but Greg Cannon mentioned that he knows a lot about the laws. He'll be at the probably the next meeting, possibly not till March 6th. And also, I just lost my whole train of thought. There was something else that just flew out of my head. our planning board attorney. We'll also know once it comes to the planning board, the attorney is has a lot of expertise with this. So we're not going to fly into this willy-nilly or, with half of a... this council and this governing body, everything will be explored fully and deeply, and there'll be a lot of experts. We have this, man from the League of Municipalities coming. Mm-hmm. We have Michelle Donato, who is our planning board attorney. We have Carmela Roberts, our engineer. We have everyone will be involved. Everyone. It's not like the council is just going to go, sounds great, let's grow cannabis. There's a lot involved. It's a very long, involved process. And everything will be researched and then decided.
Mm-hmm.
But with a lot of help from the experts.
Right. A lot
we've been doing a lot of research, too, anticipating that this may come up and maybe something that we need to be well-informed about. Mm-hmm. I know Joe is... And we've gone on the Cannabis Regulatory Commission website to look at the minutes of their meetings to see how they run and how they do things, what the regulations are, and you can learn a lot by doing that.
What other towns have done.
Right. What other towns
have had. All the way up and down the chain from growing it to distributing it and stuff like that.
It's
like a ballywick after a while. There's a lot of sticky stuff.
But you might remember we also sent out a flyer to the residents, kind of a straw poll, asking how they felt, and it came back overwhelmingly in favor of having some kind of a business here.
I could just weigh in very briefly.
Sure.
So a lot of towns have zoning applications or zoning permits that are required for these businesses, and that is a way that the town or the borough is able to monitor or limit the types of businesses that are allowed in the town and where they are. And they could have considerations of neighborhood impact, trash disposal, traffic concerns. And so it would be one application at a time through the zoning permit process where you would basically approve or disapprove through that.
And on another note, as with a liquor license, it's not like I like you, so I'm going to let you be the only bidders for this liquor license. In many towns, they have a scoring system for, you're going to apply for the license, fill this form out, it's got 40 questions on it, the one with the highest score. In terms of marijuana, people that have been busted before, minorities, women, there are criteria for that other towns have set up. Even the state has set up criteria for this sort of a thing. So it's not like anybody can apply for the license, is what it comes down to. So,
but certain people are given priority.
That depends
minorities.
On the municipality. Like up in Keyport, you know.
In New York, it's people who have liquor licenses.
I think minorities and wrongly incarcerated people. Like, there's a list of people who should be given priority for opening a business.
For possession.
Formally incarcerated.
Yeah, that's what I just said that, yeah.
For what?
I said wrongly incarcerated.
Yeah, for selling or...
Yeah, low-level offenses.
Right.
Okay, same-level offense, that's a completely different...
That shouldn't happen in the first place.
Yeah, but up in Keyport, they have two retail licenses, I think, in this part of town and in this part of town. And I think 20 people applied for it. And they use a scoring system, and some people are very upset that they didn't get the spots. So it is one of those things that it's like... It's a license.
Well, that,
anybody
you know,
can apply
we
for
We don't have
license.
That big a town
There are people out there that go to other towns to do stuff like this because it's available.
Okay, let's.
They have to have the space.
We'll have many more discussions about this. We'll form a committee. I mean, and we're a long way off from the public hearing. So let's.
Yeah, Mary has
okay.
the floor.
All right.
That's
all. Thank
anything,
you.
I was going to say anything else? Mary? Okay, thank you. Is anyone else from the public? Michael?
Okay, thank you. Michael Tixon, 37 North Valley Road.
He knows already.
I know already, yeah. first of all, I just noticed one of the things on Mr. Schloss's list was recall concerns. So I don't know if that referred to the pot being recalled because it was in, or the people on the council being recalled because they voted for it or voted against it or whatever. So this one, I just wanted to, seriously though, to point out that you mentioned of the farmland assessment being something, which is something that somebody could simply not apply for farmland assessment. There's something else that applies to three of our farms, which are the farmland preservation. The farmland preservation is something quite different, and that's something you can't unilaterally, you know, give up your farmland preservation. As Mr. Mendes knows, you buy it as a preserved farm, and that's a deed restriction that's on the farm. So that would have to be checked, you know, what the deed restrictions are on these properties before any property is approved.
Are they all three?
Mr. Mendes is
just Mr. Mendes and Mr. Gade are preserved.
Mr. Gade's farm is preserved, and the one that had been, that's now Kyle's farm, it's preserved, that was Goldstein's farm.
Yeah, that was Goldstein.
Yeah. Those three were preserved.
But I don't know, are they involved in this?
No, they're not.
Are they at this point. They could be at some time in the future.
Are they in Roosevelt? Yeah, it's a long way from
there. It's a different Kyle. Not Kyle Pegram.
No, he knows.
No.
Yeah, halfway down Nurko.
The one on
Nurko Road, Nurko Road. Okay.
Thanks. Okay, thank you, Mike. Anyone else? At all? All right, I'm going to close the public portion at 8:54 p.m. Where are we? Okay, we come to correspondence.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Quick introduction. Sorry, Melso has apparently formed a committee, an ad hoc, to talk about our Pine Drive, which leads out to the crossings.
To cross
the,
to talk about what?
Crossings.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't hear the beginning of it.
Yeah, so, sorry. I said Milton's apparently formed or forming in Winston a committee because of the traffic getting through our town going to that Adventure Crossing.
Oh, Adventure Crossing. It's a big
there is
my existence.
Drive right around
yes,
there also,
and
there, yeah.
So our friends live on that, and they're talking about blocking that road, making it a one-way, regardless, but part of that process.
Fine Drive or the Fine Drive Park? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of that process is to remove that access way through the app, like Waze and whatnot, but if you can contact the township, I'm sure they would allow you to be part of that, and then you can talk
yeah,
about that.
Yeah, if you could provide me with...
Prevent traffic from cutting through town, cutting back to the earlier conversation.
And cutting back through the Fine Drive over there.
Yeah, so yeah. But you guys talking about 571, it's the
right.
same issue, that they're being rerouted
yeah.
through
yeah.
the main...
Right,
sorry,
so if you could... No, that's okay, but if you could provide me with the name of someone from that committee, that would be great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys, for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, we come to correspondence. Joe. All right, the first item is a letter from Roberts Engineering. The first item on the correspondence list is a letter from Roberts Engineering dated January 19, 2023. regarding costs associated with additional speed humps. And we have a letter from Roberts Engineering dated January 26, 2023, regarding the yearly water audit for the Delaware River Basin Commission for 2022. And finally, we have a letter from Maureen Parrott dated February 2, 2022, regarding traffic calming measures on Pine and Tamara Drives. Minutes. The first one, we have regular meeting minutes. December 20th, 2022. Do I have a motion to approve?
Lou made the first.
Oh,
I didn't hear. Second?
I'll second.
Mike? Okay. Discussion? No. Okay. Roll call?
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Eskoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay, regular meeting minutes of December 20th has been adopted. Now we come to the regular meeting minutes of January 3rd, 2023. Do I have a motion?
Yes, you do.
Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Discussion? Roll call.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Eskoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
And Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay, January 3rd, 2023 minutes have been adopted. Come to the consent agenda. There are three resolutions. Resolution 23-32, payment of bills for February 6, 2023. Resolution 23-33, resolution authorizing Roberts Engineering Group, LLC, to prepare a yearly water audit for 2022 and submit to the Delaware River Basin Commission. And finally, Resolution 23-34, authorizing the County of Monmouth Mosquito Control Division to conduct an aerial mosquito control operation within Roosevelt Borough.
Mayor, I'd just like to say that 23-33, the resolution authorizing Roberts to do the water audit and the cost, there's a revised thing
on the top.
And the cost is $5,200, not whatever the original thing said.
Right. Okay. So noted. Okay. Do I have a motion?
You do.
Second?
I'll second it.
I'm sorry, I got.
First was.
But second was Bob. Because I thought I heard a thing.
You did
at the same time.
Was a moving block.
Welcome.
Mr. Atwood?
Yes.
Mr. Eskoff?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Ms. Hertstrom?
Yes.
Mr. Mocker?
Yes.
Mr. Trammell?
Yes.
Okay. Consent agenda resolutions have been adopted. Reports of committee chairs. Councilmember Atwood, environmental health and safety.
Well, the safety, I mean, I could talk about, you know, I have under unfinished business, more talk about the speed humps. I can do it now or I can wait for unfinished business.
Well, if it's your report, go right ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, I don't want to make it seem like the council disregards any of Maureen's ideas. I think I certainly agree that we have a speeding, that there is some people who speed in town. We don't have a lot of cars, so anything that we do has to take into account the cost of those things. A lot of the studies that I looked at of other towns that have done things, they've done traffic studies, how many cars go through their towns. So we don't really have a lot of cars. We don't really have a lot of traffic in town. So anything that we need, that we would consider, would have to take into account, like I said, we do have to take account to cost, because we our budget is has to be allocated for those, for all kinds of road repairs and water sewer repairs. But I do understand, and I don't want to make it seem like we are disregarding any of your ideas. I have to rely on Carmela's estimates when I asked her a question about what are the possibilities in town. I'm not an expert on, and of course I'm sure I could look at federal costs, but if she's, you know, and if she's giving me a cost of $10,000 for one pump, for one speed hump, it could be a higher estimate than what it would actually cost to do. My sense is that, you know, if you want to add more than putting in one would just be basically, when they repave, we would take out the one that's there on Pine and add and put one in, or two or three. We could be talking about $10,000 or $30,000, which I think is a lot. I agree, it is a lot of money if that's what it ends up being. Anything else that I've looked at this point, I mean, we could have the road paved with not putting in anything, and then go, and then after the fact say, okay, let's look at things that don't need paving people to do, something that's a rubber mat kind of raised area that trucks can get on, or possibly side road pieces. But these are things I thought could be, don't have to be put into an after thing. So that's basically, I mean, I spent some time throughout the week when I wasn't doing my regular 40-hour job trying to research as much as possible. And I did, like I said, I did find anything that I saw I thought maybe wouldn't work for our town if it did work for another town. I don't think our roads are wide enough on Pine to put something down the middle, some kind of, you know, planters or islands down the middle. I don't think that would work here. You know, maybe if I talk to an engineer, they'd say, no, you could do that. But, that could be something that we could look into after the fact. And this book might be a good resource, you know, for us to look into.
One second.
I got some notes. We did look into what your original letter to us had talked about speed tables. I did talk to Carmela about that, and she didn't think that, she didn't think that was a good idea. So I stopped looking at. Anything that I felt would be something that would be needed to be removed for plowing or for other reasons, it's always, again, our town, we don't have somebody that can easily go out, I don't think, oh, put these down and remove them, and then where do you store them? You know, I don't have storage in my house for my own stuff. You know, we barely have storage here for things. So that's always a problem for things in our town. You know, things that might be possible, put up more signs. There were talks that I did read about places where they paint on the road big signs that say 25 miles per hour. And some towns did have some luck with that, that you see something on the road and it makes you slow down right away. A lot of these things, I felt, would maybe work for a short time. Then people would say, oh, yeah, I know it's 25, but I have to get out of town. I'm doing 40 anyway. So it's always a trade-off of what you ask people to do, what people are going to do. I did do an informal, I know you said you talked to a lot of people who say they want something done. I did it, my informal, out of about 15 residents in town, 11 were against putting in speed bumps for people who thought maybe it might be a good idea, and a lot of those, even the four that were for, you know, were aghast at the cost of what that might, you know, to do. So that's...
Can I just add something, Bob?
Sure.
And also, it's so interesting to me that there can just be two sides of every single issue, because in the beginning I would think, who would argue against speed humps? But the resident who wrote the letter made a very compelling case for not having speed humps. But, of course, I wouldn't just take her opinion or, you know, theories. And so that's when I contacted the Millstone Fire Chief and was told that her letter was excellent and that every point she made was valid. And that, and he added in about the snowplow drivers, and that's when he said we have no speed humps in Millstone because apparently there are many disadvantages to them as well as advantages. And I do see speeders on the streets with speed humps because if you have a big enough SUV or van or whatever, they'll just plow right over them. And I'm not saying
that
I'm
need to do
against them, but I still think we need some, you know, further research.
I think we do need to do something, and we can look into some non-invasive ideas. And I will work with Carmela further, and, you know, hopefully we'll get this book and take a look at this book and see if what recommendations are and see how the recommendations fit into our, you know, I think our fairly unique town. I don't know how many people would be okay with putting in sidewalks, how many people would be okay with putting in barriers if then they couldn't park their cars, you know, when you have a, you know, gathering or a party and everybody parks on the street. So these are all things that, you know, we have to take into consideration.
Thank you.
You know, they are, if nothing else, an annoyance when you drive. I have two of them on my street. And if I want to go to the post office, even to the post office, which is a direct run, I go around. I cannot, you know, there's a limit.
Right.
You know, and I find that, and I've said this before, they speed to the speed bump, they go over it, they speed again. A speeder is a speeder. I'm telling you, you're not going to.
And that did come up with the whole environmental issue of, you know, if you, you know, we try to be an environmentally sensitive town, even though we allow spraying. There were some rejections of speed bumps because you do have to brake. Every time you brake, you're spitting asbestos out of your tires, so and you're causing pollution. So
and also with all these other factors, when you're accelerating again.
Right. I became more and more amazed about the two sides.
I know. I was flabbergasted when I read the letter from the resident and then started researching it further.
Welcome to government.
No, welcome to people. Everybody has a different opinion.
The most telling of all is the letter from...
But, I just wanted to thank you for bringing this to a forefront of attention that... And that's something that we need to look at.
Yeah, we're all in agreement. Speeding's a problem. It's a huge problem on 571, and then it's a real problem on our own streets.
Can we buy Bob this book?
Well, let's wait till we get to new business, and then we'll, you know.
You know, I just want to say one more, please. You know, I see these speeders, and in the spring and the summer, I'm out there sometimes. And when I see that, you can hear them coming.
Yeah.
From the North Valley Road, they crank it up, and by the time they get to my house, they're flying. And I stand there and I go like this.
I do that all the time.
You know what? I get the feeling they're going to stop back up, come up the driveway, and drive around and run me over.
That's what I think.
Just to prove a point.
Yeah, because I stand out there and I go like this, and they stop for a second,
you know,
thinking I need to tell them something, but then when they realize I'm saying slow
that's
down,
that's just a driver. That's not. That's an individual driver. Remember.
Okay, Lou?
Probably comes from New York.
Councilmember Esikoff, administration?
Well, there's just one thing. You all of you have received letters about meetings. The
GIF meeting.
The GIF meeting, which is the day of our meeting. Mm-hmm. And there's another one in March. March 13th or something like that. Let me just tell you. The GIF meeting is worthwhile for no other reason that they're giving us 275.
Yeah, we all went before COVID. But we have a council meeting that night, but Kathleen said she's certain that they'll offer another one. May not be as close as Allentown. But
when it comes again, I think we should all go. If nothing else, between all of us, we'll get $1,750.
We get a scat bus?
Huh? We get a scat bus, yes. Right.
No, we did that before. We saved a lot of money.
We saved a lot of money. And we only had to go to Millstone. Remember that?
Not the most scintillating meetings.
I thought it was actually,
for $1,750, I'll sit there for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Well, different people there also.
Yeah, I thought, I enjoyed the last one we went to.
I just wanted to say, under administration, if I could, Lou, and I think it does fall under administration, we have an issue, and I think in the December meeting, the December 20th meeting, we decided that we needed to review the and create a policy for the use of public facilities.
I think we did.
We want to revisit it.
I think it should either go to committee or a separate committee should be set up. It's an administration kind of issue, and to create a policy for use of the room. And we said that we would do it on the December 20 meeting, which I have the minutes of. We approved tonight. I think we need a discussion of that, and I think we need to derive a really good public policy out of that. We need to talk about use of facilities by different public entities, by community groups, by citizens and others, and there may be different regulations concerning different groups and how they use it. Private parties, $300 deposit. Community groups, we kind of take it on good faith that they're not going to damage the facility.
Except that's not the case. Almost every single public function.
But this is where I'm going with this, Mayor, is that, we do need to look into that and form a really good public policy on it. It's really important.
We have one. I really do.
But it needs to be revisited. It's not clear.
Maybe.
It doesn't define things like damage. What is actually considered damage? And I think there should be before and after pictures of the facilities.
Right. I'm willing to do that.
So that we know what was damaged and what wasn't.
That.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, so I think.
How about just the administration committee meet and do that?
Who's on the committee?
Lou is the chair.
I'm on it. I don't know who else is on it.
Who else?
Who else is administration?
I didn't. Let me go inside and I'll tell you.
No, it's a good idea because, truthfully, as much as we love how Roosevelt operates as this tiny little family community where most of us know each other, but honestly, after every public event here, no matter how small or how large,
who rented the room,
there's problems afterwards.
Yeah.
So
do you think we should not let people use the room?
I had considered that.
At this point,
as the chairman, I had considered that.
Most municipalities do not. I looked into how many municipalities.
So you're thinking that we should not let people use the room?
That means no more arts project.
No matter what decision we make.
We have a string band concert.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's an ideal solution at all. But at least maybe with a strict public policy, because, I looked into it. Most municipalities do not offer their rooms. Even I think Millstone Fire used to have a community room, and now they don't allow the public to use it.
That's because they took it over.
But also, I know that, and most municipalities charge a fee that they keep. They you have to pay to rent out the room. But we don't want to do any of those things here. We don't want to not let people use it.
These are all the things that the committee should discuss.
It's the definition of a problem.
Right. On the other hand,
definition of what?
A problem.
But on the other hand, every time there's an event, there's problems after.
Sometimes major, sometimes minor. And what policies we had before didn't cover things like the floor too, and use facilities use forms. Floor should be inspected to make sure somebody didn't roll something heavy and gouge the floor.
Well, the piano's been moved frequently lately, and it's made gouges on the walls and scratches on the floor.
We've had,
We painted this wall because people were moving their tables and scratching the taillights. But I think we need a clear public policy
that protects not only the council and all, but the public. Who, if we decide that they're going to use the facilities.
And protects
and
the
I'm
room.
100% in favor of facility use by the public. I think they should be protected. We should be protected. Things should be clear. There shouldn't be any objective, non-objective or subjective standards, you know, where we say, you know, you did this. It should be really clear. You either did something or you didn't, and here's the cost. So I think that needs to be brought to committee. And then I think a new facilities form needs to come out. That's based on that policy, too.
So the administration committee is Lou, Connie, and you.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Let me say this. I'm only here for 10 years, and it's like part of the uniqueness and the beauty and the qualities of this town is that there is a place for people to get together and listen to music or put photographs up or have art there. Or even we have meetings here, and we sat and we discussed the water sewer lines in front of the map there so we know what was done and what wasn't done. This is really like a community center. And if we don't have any other community center, and we can't use this room, then, you know,
it's
there are
the
people
school.
Like
He's
me
going
here. School. I could move to Long Branch or, like, you know, or New York. Or, this is part of the community that I know of.
Well, it
and
is
again,
our
I'm only
community
here for 10
center.
Years, so, you know.
But again, we're under the committee, Mayor. We're under committee reports, but I was just suggesting that it be brought
no
to
objection.
The committee.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is the de facto community center for all. Yeah.
I have no objection. Yeah. I just, you know.
Okay.
Now, in the world that I come from, when you go to somebody's space, there's usually a house person there that is in between you and the space. So if I want to put something on a wall, I go to the house chief, and I'll say, I want to put this on the wall. There are some stages in New York where it agrees, holy hell, and no, you're not going to touch the walls. Other places you could just do it. But if we had more people in public works or something, I don't know, administration, that there could be someone here.
Listen, not
would there be a means of taking pictures and saying this is the way it was when we got
but
there?
But you don't have a public work.
Right.
So if you want a full-time public work person, now you're going to pay.
We should think about stuff like that. Okay.
But you got to think about that. You got it. That could pay. That's a
and
full
he's
got to
be here all the time.
Or that
and
person she, here for events or whatever, you know, part-time. It's what we have. We don't have anybody
full-time.
We have Bundy and Lindsay. It's great.
Right.
The only full-time person in the entire borough is Anna.
I know.
That's it.
And she's
overworked. Yeah.
She's a tiger when it comes to this room.
Yeah.
Well,
that's but
this
she's also,
building. This is her building. Let me say
but
that.
She's also overworked because she's really... everything. She's not just finance. She's not just HR.
Well,
she's
and just
everything.
To put and just to put some closure on this discussion, I think it ought to be a policy that's drafted by the council. I think the form facility use form should be drafted and approved by the council, and it should be derived from whatever policy we come up with. And there should be a public hearing on that policy because what we're talking about is public use. The public needs to be brought in and. They need to tell us what they want of their tax dollars and what this room is used for. So I think it needs to follow that good process that we do a good job with that generally. As long as we're mindful of it and bring it to a process and all, then I don't think we'll have as many problems with it.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think that people just come in and do what they do in the room despite what... you know, it was on the form, but we need better control for sure. We need clearer rules and better
rules.
Control.
Okay.
Councilmember Hurstrom, can you?
No, finance.
Oh, sorry, Mike.
Well, Bob reminded me that everything seems to have a dual nature.
Have a what?
A dual nature,
and taxes are that way too. We collect taxes for the common good. And we spend them, and hopefully we spend them in a very wise way and manage the public's finances. So it's an interesting, usually it gets a bad name, taxes. Are you going to raise taxes? What about my taxes? I want my taxes to go down. Well, taxes can be a good thing if they're spent wisely because it's a way of bringing money together and using them for things like safe streets and public facilities and all of that. So I'm just saying that everything, Bob's right, everything does have a dual nature, and if you look deeply enough, it's complicated as hell. And it's pros and cons every which way, and sometimes you just have to make a call and take a middle-of-the-road approach to things. And talking about finances, we need a 2021 audit.
Yes, thank you.
Wait, don't thank me. I'm just saying we need it. It was due on September 30th of 2022. So it's a little over 4 months past due, but it's past the due date. So that's the drop-dead date that you know, the Department of Local Government Services says it should be due. So
we
it's
lost our credit rating last year because 2020 was late.
Yeah, so it's four months late, so I'd like to suggest that we make sure or encourage George Lang to work on those numbers so that they then can go over to Jerry and we can
do
have that audit.
Contact him, Mike? As
yeah, if you could,
chair.
Please.
That I just want to say, Joe, that Mike
sorry.
Is finance chair.
He's going to contact?
Yeah. I just
no,
want to say that.
Peggy will.
No, I thought you, I just said you will because you're finance chair. I can.
Oh, you said me. I will.
Yeah, but I can.
I will.
Either
that's
one
fine.
Of us.
I'll call him.
But I just want to say that Jerry and George assured me that that credit rating has no effect on Roosevelt. We don't take those kind of loans.
I understand that, but I have personal friends that are money managers, and I said to them, "Oh, your accountant says don't worry about it. The credit ratings don't matter." And they said,
We've never gone for that kind of loan that would
have
be
we
affected.
Ever lost our credit rating before?
They assured me that.
Well, he assured us that we would have our 2021 by November last year, also.
Well, I'm just saying.
It's close, but I don't have.
I'll encourage him, and we can get that moving
stronger,
and we'll have some more data on our monies and. You know, it's like having blood work done. You need to know what your blood, you know, how all your blood factors are and how you're doing and all of that. We have a lot of major.
There's some people that don't want to know.
Yeah.
Right. We have some major issues that really are going to command a lot of discussion, a lot of decisions. Real renovations at the sewer treatment plant that are going to be very costly, very expensive. May cost up to $3-4 million, maybe even more, who knows.
Keep it down at 2.
Well, she said it depends on just how we can do the bare minimum that's required.
Right.
Or
we have options with it. And this council is going to need to be focused on the important issues, the real important issues, which are those big issues of financing of plants and that kind of thing. So I just want to keep everybody aware that this is an issue that's looming, it's coming up, and it's going to demand our attention as a council in terms of finances and also I think we need to keep our focus and not get too focused on a lot of other things, even though a lot of them are important, like public safety. We need to not get involved in disputes about all kinds of things because we have a lot of major issues that really demand our focus and attention. And that's it for finance.
Councilmember Hurstrom.
Okay. Just a report on the FDR Amphitheater Committee. At this point, we had sent out to architects and landscape designers, and we did that end of January 13th. Expected to have things back by the 16th of February, and in between, you know, that time, we had on the 2nd of February, we had said for people who want to come and see the area and ask questions, we would have people there to talk with them on the 2nd, and Mike Hamilton and Alan Malik were there. And it isn't that people had to come, it's just that they wanted to explore it further. And we had 5, you know, companies that showed up, you know, for that. And from what I understand, and Mike can certainly, you know, say that it seemed like it went well and lot of questions.
They were very interested. These are good architectural and landscape architecture firms. They're excited about the possibility of coming up with some interesting plans for the amphitheater area. So to actually have five companies who are interested in the work and coming up with the proposals, that's exciting to me.
They're aware of our history, our uniqueness.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's exciting.
That's what I assumed, yeah.
Yeah. Also, they had wanted to have a survey of the area, and Steve Mucker had finished the survey, and it now is put up on the website if you want to see, you know, what it's like. Because you walk by it, you know, and
I have a copy of
it
here if anybody wants to.
Okay. You know it, but it's interesting to see how far it goes back into the woods and, you know, what's there. So, did a great job with that. So, our next is February 16th at 2 o'clock. They should have all the proposals that are going to come in, should be at the Borough Hall. And that will be our start to go through the process of selecting the consultant, you know, for the project.
Will that be?
Well, it's not going to be that day because they have to be reviewed by by the borough attorney all year.
And then I
don't want you to think that it's going to happen that day.
All right.
Is it a sealed opening after that? Is it like
no? That's the
that
seal opening that Anna will open up to all the bids.
And all the respondents will be here in the room?
If they show up.
Okay.
Some come, some... Right. I don't know who's going to... Okay. They
and
can just mail it.
Were they pretty local?
And the lawyer would be here.
Okay.
No, they're all over.
No.
Haddonfield.
No, it's just a bid opening. So
yeah.
Then
yeah, so they probably
have to...
Princeton.
You know,
oh, well,
she'll
I
review them, she'll get the price, whatever,
right.
And then...
Hand it to the lawyer.
And they review it to make sure they're complete.
He's got
to
review, right?
It has to be complete. It has to be to the point.
Can this
correct.
Be put on the attorney's schedule so that he can tell us when we're going to see them?
I don't know.
Is
16th,
that possible?
The 16th will be the opening.
Can on the 16th, when this is open,
right.
How long before the rest of the committee?
What is
the
16th? What day?
It's a Thursday. It's a Thursday at 2 o'clock.
And that's when the bid is going live, or that's when you're getting the
results. Yeah.
Oh, so then you can just forward them to my office, and then we'll review them, whichever one you.
No. But I'm asking when how long is that review period going to be?
It's an RFQ.
Will we have it by the next Monday?
But you still
it depends on how many applications you get, but you would get the lowest one, so it wouldn't take very long.
We want them all.
Oh, okay. Then
we want to see them all.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
You can see them, but. Before you award one, that's when we would do the review.
Well, it's going to be a month that we have to review, you
right.
know, the committee
okay.
to assess, you know, each one. If people want to come and we want to have talk with them or see them further.
Okay.
So we have a month. But we
you
need
know
to
what?
See it so
I'm
we can
sorry.
Start that process.
It's an RFQ. It's
them.
Not a bid.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's not a bid.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do they have to pick the lowest bid, or they
no,
can
no,
pick
no,
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 because
no,
it's
no,
not
no,
a bid,
no,
right.
it's
not a bid. That was my fault.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
That's
right. And do you have an idea of how many you're getting? Is it five, or is it
we don't have
yeah, no.
Our problem is we sent out to the American Society of Landscape Architects,
right?
And that person sent it out to their 400 members.
So that it could be potentially...
We have no idea.
We have no
right.
idea.
We have no... We sent out to about 30, you
okay.
know, besides that. And we know that the five came back. There was one that wasn't on our original list. So we know
okay.
that must have come from there. But...
So
we don't know.
So, well...
Sure.
I mean, can
someone...
The borough is going to get the the responses back, and then the borough can send them to council, and you can all review
okay.
prior to Greg or myself looking at those qualifications.
Because then a contract is going to need
right.
to be,
well,
and
wait,
then
wait,
and
wait.
That's when
we would just then approve that the bid is basically in
proper in
light of the proposal, the request for the proposal
right.
at that stage. But you can review them before my office looks them
yeah.
over.
And can you so you can tell us the number that came in? And
well,
who
the
are.
Borough would receive that information.
Anna will know.
Yeah.
Anna will know.
Yes.
Okay. Can send that out to us.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't know how quickly. If you get 400, you're not getting that by the next day. If you got five,
no problem. That's it.
Or if we got 25.
And it's a rolling basis, right? So you might get some before the deadline.
When is your closing
date? Yeah, but you can't open it up until
when
that
is your
day.
Closing date?
Okay. The 16th of February.
Well, you'll know as soon as you close. On the 15th or the 14th, you'll probably know. You just ask Anna how many came in, and that's it.
Yeah. I'm saying, like, just in terms of keeping
you have five
numbers.
So far.
But
you think you'll get more?
They don't have to take the lowest one.
No, it's not a bid.
So the contractors that are here on the day of the opening.
How many came? Did you get any bids back already?
That's correct.
Correct.
I'd be surprised if anyone. People don't usually come in. I've never seen that so far.
They just submit it, but you never.
Yeah, they wait to hear.
People have been here for the opening.
So I've never.
So would
that.
I be allowed to be here at 2:00 on that day?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Then we'll know.
On the 16th, you could be here. You'll see.
Yeah.
And at that point,
you have one. Or
at that point, you out of
400.
Six, you may reject three outright. You may reject three outright.
It's very rare.
I forgot. It was a request. So
yeah, but since I've been here, no one shows up in person to see because they're. They don't get an answer that day anyway. They don't get any kind of confirmation or rejection. So it's very rare that they would come.
And then when you call them back and say you won,
right?
They may say no. Maybe we changed our mind.
Well, sure.
That's happened.
Yeah,
it's happened before.
So we have to review it for completeness. We asked in our RFQ or whatever, or whatever you want to call it. We've called it by different abbreviations, you know.
Right.
Typical for Roosevelt.
Well, actually, Alan originally said it's an RFOIP or something, like interest.
Yeah, request of interest.
Your interest in the proposal,
But we have to review it because we had certain things. We wanted a couple of different plans. And so we have to go down the checklist once we have them and say, okay, they meet all the criteria. And, you know, there's that kind of process. We have a form that that was developed by Alan Malik.
So you have to have a couple of meetings to work this out.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's what we're
doing.
Yeah,
a lot of
people.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Anything
really
else,
Connor?
Yes. The other thing is Celeste was here at the last meeting about the senior housing. So I have talked with her, and we've decided on some actions before we would try to go out to, like, East Windsor or other places to see, you know, whether things would help. So we need a little bit more time, you know, to do that. We're gathering information.
Okay. Were you able to contact Jerry Millar? She was the past president. She may have some useful information.
I'm sure we will do that, you know, long time. And anything anybody else knows about things, I thought I'd go back through past borough bulletins and sort of see what are some
and
of the
Anna's
activities.
A good person, too, because she's here for the last many years for all of their meetings and get-togethers. So,
good.
But if you can, you have a chance.
Yes.
Jerry's a good person.
Okay, great, thanks.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of the other people.
Could I ask something? Are you talking about the Roosevelt Senior Group?
Yes.
Well, because I was the vice president.
Oh, what? Great. Well, I'll be over to see you.
Are we trying to get it going again?
Celeste is asking why we can't do that.
Well, we were afraid of.
That's what we explained.
And we purposely have just said.
That's exactly
what
we
did
explained.
That. Yes.
Yeah.
But when would that go away? And what do you want to have?
That's
when
what we're
do
all
you
asking.
Have and what do you want to have is what we need to talk about. So I'll be happy to talk with you. Great.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
We have money.
Yeah, I told them there's a budget. I said that there's a budget. There is money.
I haven't heard what that budgeted amount is.
Yeah, how much should we give him? It seems kind of funny for the chair of finance.
Well, you know
how much do you get?
Mostly Alan and Jerry used to Alan McGrath and Jerry Millar used to take care of that. Alan particularly sort of had oversight on the budget.
He was the treasurer.
Yeah, so unfortunately, Alan has died, and Jerry's not in a position anymore to be able to be involved. She may come to the meetings, but she wouldn't be able to be in any kind of.
So, did anybody keep the records, even if somebody else passed away?
We budgeted
well,
a dollar and a quarter.
It was a very loose.
A dollar and a quarter per person.
But I mean, the money, the treasury report.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty loose, Connie.
Pretty loose.
It was really just. Everyone coming, have different speakers, have lunch,
you know, it was.
We don't want those seniors.
As far as like agendas and minutes, and it was pretty loose. And then Alan would call me and just say, okay, we're going to go see the George Street Theater in New Brunswick, and we have enough money, right? And I would check and say, yeah, and it was okay. I mean, it was very loose.
Okay.
So,
Connie,
shall I talk with you?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes. Great.
Okay. We could give it a shot. Also, Millstone was allowed to be part of our.
We explained that to her also.
Millstone,
yeah, we explained that. Okay. Also, are you going to set parameters? Because it kind of made me laugh because Celeste is actually fairly young. Like, is there, do you have to be a certain? Is there going to be an age requirement to join the seniors?
We have to talk about it.
She was talking about her mom, I think.
No, she was also talking for herself.
Yeah. And she's
58.
Yeah, she's 58. Well, so
55 is considered senior citizen.
Well, for housing, but I think the government considers 65 or 62. 62. Yeah. But whatever. I mean, it's Roosevelt. If she wants to come,
yeah,
I don't
see. Young people.
Right. Young people for the senior organization.
Yeah.
Isn't that an oxymoron?
That's right.
I just made it.
Yes, you did. Okay, Councilmember Mocker, Public Works.
It's not
anything.
We painted the walls.
And the report.
And that's why
it?
I really
that's
want
it.
To
and
try to
report.
Keep them clean, keep them nice. Okay,
with your one DPW employee.
Yeah,
or half a one. Right?
Half a one. Yeah.
I'll tell you, he does
they
more
damaged.
Part time
than
many full timers do.
The walls were damaged fast.
Well, he keeps wanting to retire, and Anna and I
he's not
forbid
allowed.
Him. Right, we just say no.
We wouldn't accept it.
I know, and he goes, "No, I'm really," and we go, "No, you're really not." Okay, Councilmember Trammell, utilities.
You have included my report, but let me just see if I can read it real fast here. There's a bunch of things.
Give the Cliff Notes version.
That's the Cliff Notes, right. Okay, on the 20th of January, there's a water main break across the street here. Some of us were around. They came quickly. It was under control. John Holden was at a funeral. He came right afterwards. So everybody was here 30 minutes. Shut the street off. Millstone Fire Department. John shut the water off. Earl Asphalt came and patched it up. That stretch of water pipe is going to get switched out one day. This is the third break we've had there, I believe. And there's no end, like with a fire hydrant or a blowout, so that pipe cannot be cleaned out, and it's going to collect a lot of.
So you need this account to begin with.
We are beyond the 5 year. We're beyond the 5 year moratorium for paving, and they paved the road 5 years ago. However, there will be someone from the county here in the spring to look at the patch, look at the road because the road was buckled. And they have to figure out if it's going to be okay. It may very well be at our expense if we have to repair the road. So these are things that are coming up financially that we have to keep our eye on.
Right.
Okay, because the water broke there and it cleared a bunch of dirt out from under the road as well as buckling the road. They did a patch. Now let's hope nothing else happens. Okay, so that's out front. That's the county's road. 27th of January, I spoke with Carmella about the lake encroaching upon the wastewater, the sewer plant. The beaver situation on North Valley is one thing, that's fine. But Assunpink Lake is backing up, and we found out, Steve and I went out, which is later in here the other day, and we measured the water level at the boat ramp at the lake, and we measure the water level at the sewer plant. The water at the sewer plant is at the fence on one side of the sewer plant. So if it keeps coming up, it's going to block the effluent coming out of the sewer plant, and then we're going to start having problems with the DEP and stuff like that. The state fish and wildlife guy, Michael Patrick, is advised of what's happening. The DEP, Larry Sire from our town here, who looks after our water and sewer plant, is advised. And the DEP, Peter Winkler, over at the Assunpink is advised. I walked around with a beaver catcher guy, and we couldn't even get near to where the dams would be because it was too much water. So we know from Steve's observations, being a surveyor, that the water is 3 foot 6 inches higher.
Yeah, at the
wastewater plant
versus in the lake. So something happening.
Something in between, and whatever the reason is, we don't care. We don't want that water to keep encroaching upon the sewer plant.
Well, it's dangerous, right? It's.
If the water can't get out of the sewer plant, the DEP will shut it down.
Right.
So this is the New Jersey DEP people that are dealing with this, and it's a New Jersey lake, so something's got to be done. Carmella understands it, so everybody is in on the loop now. And if it's beavers, it's beavers. They got to go. If it's not beavers, they emptied one of the lakes. They didn't empty it. They lowered the Sunrise Tavern Lake. And that water would go right into the area and back of the sewer plant. However, it should even out on the lake unless there's some obstacle in between the sewer plant and the boat plant.
Which is what we have.
Well, the beaver dam over on North Valley Road is about 2.5 feet. It's perfectly normal that a beaver dam would be 2.5, 3.5 feet. So it could be a beaver dam. We don't know. The state's got to look at it. Okay. We met Mike Lyons, Steve, and I met here on the 28th with that map. Mike had he's the wastewater guy. He had the video of the Tamara Drive sewer pipes here. And there is major infiltration. Would you call it major, Steve? It's pouring in those pipes on Tamara.
I wouldn't call it major, but we've got significant.
Okay, significant infiltration. And if you look at the thing, I mean, you got gallons of water pouring into that pipe from standing water underground, basically surface water. And that's part of the problem in Tamara.
And that's been a problem for years.
Over by Rochdale, the street is kind of buckled over there, and water comes out of that. And is it the sewer? We don't know. Is it just groundwater? Seems like groundwater. There's a lot of groundwater on Tamara. So
when you build a town on swampland.
We built a town on a swamp. So we're advising Carmella to, we already said let's change the water service pipes on Tamara Drive. I'm of the opinion that we should also change the sewer pipes there. Okay, so we need to know how much that costs. And again, that goes back into George Lang. Do we have credit? This is another project that's got to be done. Fairly large project. He also videoed it from Rochdale through the swamp to Tamara and on down to the wastewater plant. That's all in pretty good shape. That was replaced in 1989-1990 with the big Farmers Home Trust Fund.
I think it was 92. Yeah.
92. A couple of $1 million for that and other repairs at the sewer plant. Also at the sewer plant, the guys came down the other day and did pours. They found that they wanted to see the integrity of the soil. What do you call that? It's not coring. It's okay. But they put a derrick out there and they pounded the soil. They went down so far. They wanted to see what kind of shape the soil was in case, because we do have to pull the trickling filters out and put new trickling filters in. So I don't know what the process will be. They might have to kill one of those, build another one over here, so the fence might have to get expanded by 10, 20 feet or something like that. So that's another thing. So that's big time money coming up. A couple of $1 million was her estimate, maybe 3. I'm hoping we can keep it down around 2. And that's a financial thing. So George Lang has got to help us out here. What is this going to cost us? Is it going to be easy to get these loans, these grants?
Can finance have a meeting with George?
We absolutely need to, yeah.
Right. Okay, so that's another thing there. Also, the first 60 feet going into the sewer plant, it's good from there all the way up to Rochdale, but the first 60 feet, we've known this for a year or two, has to get replaced. There's too much of a dip in the line. The camera goes underwater, so that's got to get replaced at some point. Okay, what else? There was a T-Mobile crew that showed up at the water tower. We have the contract with T-Mobile. They've given us, I don't know, $40,000 a year, I think, which is very nice. They put antennas up there. They're going to put a transmitter shack in. And they had to dig the foundation, the footing for it, and they also had to dig from the electrical service inside the fence over to the telephone pole where the electricity comes out. And so that is done, and they're working on the foundation now. And doing so, and I read this on the T-Mobile report maybe a year ago, that there's an Indian burial ground there. So we do have, and the guy that's in charge of digging this stuff out, there's an American Indian from Arizona, this guy John Stone. We discussed it, and Anna has been receiving correspondence from someone in the American Museum, or American Indian Preservation Front, and they're going to let us know more about it. But my consideration is, if there's truly a graveyard there, we should do something to show respect for that graveyard. We might be required, yeah. I don't know, but I think it's in our best interest for the spirits out there.
And the marker and...
Anyhow, yeah. I mean, just to show reverence to whatever it is, you know.
Well, absolutely, but it's not marked off.
It's not, and it is between the water tower and North Valley Road. It's that little stretch in there, Michael, almost part of your driveway.
Yeah. Right, so. You have ghosts in your house, Mike?
You live in a historic area.
The historic area of the historic town.
Do you ever hear, Michael?
Also the signal.
Do you ever hear any of the Indian dancing that's going on?
I haven't
heard it.
Too bad. I have to listen for it.
You're missing something.
They're probably Leonard Lenape Indians, but we'll find out more when we can.
And that's,
so that's the long and short of my little tchotchke here.
Okay.
It's been a busy couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's a lot happening, a lot. Our officials, Mike, do you have anything you want to? And Mike?
I think I ought to not report on anything more tonight.
Okay. All right, we come to unfinished business, speed humps. So how about if we need to form a committee? You want to chair the committee, Bob?
Sure.
Okay.
I think we should let it, you know, if the book, is it only one place to get it?
It's an electronic PDF book. It's called A Guide to Vertical Deflection Speed Reduction Techniques.
Is that something Carmela might have?
It is something that, I mean, it's...
I'll contact Carmela.
Yeah.
And the, just so the mayor and council are aware, I think it says that it's directed for planners of municipalities. So, Carmela. Yeah.
Great.
That's what it's called, one. Right?
Oh, your plan.
It's called Speed Reduction Techniques.
Yes.
A guide to planning and design of speed humps, speed tables, and other
that's what that's about.
Okay. You might get a discount.
But I would ask, it's $75 for a member, $150 for a non-member. I would ask that it be available to us.
Who's us?
The public.
Well,
that's why the borough should buy it.
Of course, the borough would buy it.
He's going to chair the committee. He'll read it. And report back to us.
What are you calling the committee?
He's like, read the book.
Bob, yeah,
it's
me.
Yeah, be able to publish
Bob's
it on the website.
And what's it going to cover? No, that's where I was going.
Right. Yeah.
What's the charge?
The feasibility of safety.
I asked that Bob what the charge of this committee would be. I think it's important to define.
Yeah.
What's the limits of what we're talking about?
What's
the limits of what we're
talking about?
Right, whatever safety measures we can put in. So is that speed humps? Is that speed tables?
For pedestrian safety.
Marking, right. It all hinges on pedestrian safety.
Or
nothing, right.
The school website.
The gamut from nothing to...
is also...
something.
Right. Yeah, I think I was on that.
So... anyone else from the council would like to be on it?
That's called the New Jersey School Zone Design Guide.
What I looked up was safe routes to school.
Yeah. So there's, I can say also just for Glenn to give a call.
Anyone else from the council would like to be on the committee, or is Bob going to be a one-man committee?
Good luck, Bob. I don't see a lot of volunteers.
Well, I can start, Mike, and then I'll forget how much.
Yeah.
And maybe one of the parents, like someone from the school, maybe right. One of the parents.
Or you do?
Lou
will help you.
Oh, okay. Good.
I'll work with you. I'll try.
Oh, boy.
Speed hump contrary here.
To be honest, since it came from the public,
yeah.
I would like to be on. I'd like pedestrians to be on. I'd like the meetings to be in public, not secret.
We don't have secret meetings.
We don't have a single secret meeting. Not one, ever.
Well, you never have to make meetings.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Well, then, well, I don't
yes,
see
we do.
Are they on the calendar?
They're on the website. Well, there's
yeah. I had a public meeting at the sewer plant, and only so many people showed up, but people did show up. You know.
Yeah.
And we discussed the future of the trickling filters and all of that. And I actually want to have a public meeting.
Let me get the book and then put together some talking points, and then we'll put. And then I'll send out. How would I put together if the public wanted to be part of the committee?
We could put it on the website. Okay. And we'll put it on the website for
okay.
you.
Well, we do have a precedent with the firehouse, the committee. There was a committee about the firehouse,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it met in public.
Yeah.
Well, they all meet in public. There's never been a single committee meeting at someone's house here or somewhere else. Every meeting is here.
Well, I never saw any committee meetings on the borough website.
And we also bring them up. If you listen to the meetings, if you're not here, we mention that there will be a committee meeting on specific days.
Yeah, but some committee, finance might have to meet
privately.
With the three of them first before
the public can
come. Whatever it is, we meet here, and the public is always invited to come, but... noticing it properly, putting it on the borough website might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, I'll do that.
But
yeah,
who's just going to be on the committee?
Well, I don't know yet.
Well, he's going to get the book.
Check it out first.
I'll have to. When I get
Lou
the book,
Lou is going to be on the committee, and if you want to be on the committee, and then I'll ask the woman who wrote the letter, Claire, to be on the committee, so we have a balanced. Okay.
Good. Just one other little thing I'd like to throw in. I want to thank Steve for being a surveyor and helping out so much with the stuff that he's done, with knowing the water levels and all of that, and also, being a friend of Beavers and, helping us distinguish between what's good with that, with
friend
the lake,
of Beavers.
And what he did for Connie's committee here. How much would it have cost to have a regular surveyor come in and to do the extensive stuff that he did?
And if you hired him, you're leaving your charge.
And for Mike, for thinking about the money situation here, because this is for real. And Bob, for doing the Bob thing, looking at the committee about the speed bumps and things like that. And of course, Lou. But I think the council is starting to work as a council. I'm just...
Starting?
I'm just kind of passing through, I feel like. I'm only here for 10 years, but this is becoming like a...
We have so much work on the table. We have
to Anna about ordering this.
We have so much work on that we need to do
exactly.
That we all are having committees. We're processing in committees, and that's a great thing for the council.
That's a good thing for democracy.
I think we've always been very democratic in Roosevelt.
This administration has.
Yeah, I was going to clarify, and I didn't want to sound like. Okay. Well, I was thinking that we have so many decisions to make with different opinions, whether we should have speed humps, whether we should have cannabis, and whether we should remove the beavers or not. But at this point, I think that decision has been taken out of our hands. We need to remove the beavers.
Well, the beaver thing, that's going to be the state.
I'm saying, but I don't think we need to make a decision.
Right.
And if the state decides not to do anything about it, can we sue the state of our wastewater plant?
Yeah,
it's compromised.
We're
talking
serious stuff. Again.
But I do. I mean, at this point, because I think maybe all of us were on the fence after we heard about the positive side of having the beavers. And I had spoken to Ellen Silverman, who's the new chair of the Environmental Commission, and I said, Ellen, what do you think about removing the beavers? And she said, well, they're causing a lot of destruction. They're causing a lot of, in
impediments.
She said, on the other hand, the water is much better since they're there. It's flowing. She said they're eating all the invasive species, but they're also eating
In California, which is a very liberal state, as we all know, they passed a statewide referendum, resolution, whatever, however they do things there, that said that if a municipality wants to get rid of the beavers, they can't trap them and kill them. They have to relocate.
I think they already did. I think they made some trips in the middle of the night to Roosevelt.
Yeah, they may. they may have, but really, just keeping your eyes on what the issue is. It's flooding is the issue that we're addressing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So even Ellen, who is a bit of an expert, was completely on the fence. But now that decision's been taken away from us, knowing what's happening near by the sewer plant. So we've got to remove the beavers.
Oh, yeah.
No. Just by the sewer plant. Well, it wouldn't be by the sewer plant. It would be down where the obstructions are, which is not our jurisdiction. We don't have any control over that. It would be the Assanpink, yeah.
You know what they do, don't you?
Yeah.
They've moved them a few times.
Yeah, you have to keep after them and keep on.
They come back. They return. Yeah. What house? Where do you live?
In 4 North Valley.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you across from the Solar Village?
Yes.
Last house?
Yeah.
I walk my dog. I hear that sump pump nonstop.
Yeah, not that. That's
not the red house.
On the corner.
You're the dome.
Yeah, we're the dome. We went to the Murphys. Yeah.
You're Peggy, right.
Across from the Solar Village.
Right. And yours got, the one across from Solar Village never stops. Never. And it's noisy.
What's that?
Yeah.
What's noisy?
Yeah. The pump. Okay, so I think we're in agreement that whatever the state tells us to do with the beavers, which I think is going to be removed,
for their property.
You know what they do? In Vermont, they relocate them and they bomb them.
And they what?
They explode them. That's the only way you won't get rid of them unless
you mean they kill
dynamite
them?
Underneath them.
You mean they kill
the
them?
The dam.
Not the beavers. Not the beavers.
They think it's a log, and they take a stick of dynamite.
I've seen them do it. They get dynamite.
They put bark around it.
Well, the beavers are determined. That's why. I know.
You see lumber going up in the air.
Not yet.
And the water starts to flow.
Okay, so let's go on to new business. It's 10 o'clock at night.
I thought about that, too.
Okay.
You know what they do? They put out a notice on there. Lou. You're dispossessed. 12 days to get out of here.
Eviction notice. Okay, new business.
If they don't go, it's too bad.
The use of the Borough Hall. We have a request for the use of the Borough Hall for a baby shower on March 25th. 2023 from 6 to 10.
No, 10 to 6. I think it's 10 to 6.
I've been eating yet today.
It's been a long
from
night.
10 to 6.
Is this going to be before the committee?
That's my kind of shower. Start at 6 at night and go right through till 10 in the morning. True.
Is this going to be before the committee meeting or after the
committee? Before. Okay. Do I have a motion?
Yes.
Yes.
My brain just turned off. Okay. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Is there something else we're going to do in new business besides form a committee?
No.
Okay. I'm losing it. I haven't eaten.
I know.
There's
really
more business.
Buying the book.
We're out of business.
We're out of business.
My brain officially shut off. I'm so hungry.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to open the floor for public comment at 9:58 p.m. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak about anything at all?
I was just curious about the beavers on...
Come to the mic and just say your name and address. State your name and address.
Hello, Peggy Ring, 4 North Valley Road in Roosevelt. And I was just curious about if there was any plan to remove the beavers from North Valley.
Do you want them removed? You do?
Yes.
Okay, you see, there's just like the speed humps.
Right, everything, yeah.
Everybody loves the speed humps, everybody
I know, so many people love the beavers.
Yeah.
I just don't like the sump pump going or want my basement to flood.
But that's only since the dam is there?
No, you could see that it's just been, we've had some rain recently.
Right.
But you could see the water level must be.
Do you ever see them?
Oh, God, yeah. I see my little friend all the time.
I have a video here of him.
Yeah. Is that the one by us?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
well,
so...
We have plans to address the some of the flooding that you guys are experiencing with a road work project that we're going to be doing a few years from now.
Oh, well, the beaver is different than the road.
No. She's talking about the flooding.
Are you at 4 or 24?
On North Valley.
4.
Yeah,
so that's not
east,
near.
She's not on the
yeah.
east side of
yeah.
North Valley. She's across from
yeah.
Solar
she's across from
oh,
Solar Village.
Right.
Okay.
She's
yeah.
next door, to,
right.
she's
yeah,
next door
yeah.
to Murphy's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there, I haven't talked to Windsor Ed, I'm sure there some pump has probably been going, because they're even closer to the
do they have a basement there also?
Yeah,
they did.
Well,
like,
there's,
like
a there's all kinds of piping that you can do. There's all kinds of piping that you can put in.
You're kind of lucky because you have more storage.
But there's all kinds of piping that could be put in place to make sure that the water level doesn't get too high and it overflows and goes back to wherever you decide to drain it to. They've called them beaver deceivers before, and there's all kinds of strategy.
I don't think it's going to work there. That's,
no.
That's a real
no.
But they do have the drainage things that we looked at that.
The lodge that they have under the telephone pole is where the drainage from North Valley comes out.
Yeah, I know that.
So I don't know if they're going to block it off, the beavers, or if they're fine.
There's
with
so
it.
Much wood going right towards that bridge. But I saw the gentleman that was from the, I guess from the
DEP or the
state.
Yeah. That they were looking, and if there's no problem with the bridge, they won't do anything.
Right. No, they're not going to do anything with the bridge. But we had them take the tree down that the beavers on the east side, that the beavers were chewing up, because that would have fallen onto the power.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of the people from JCP&L.
Yeah.
And he was up there eating the bark off those trees now.
That's what they eat between the bark and the tree. Yeah. So it's like.
Yeah. We. We know.
Yeah, yeah.
We know.
So I just kind of left them alone. I mean, that's kind of, if it really, was there that much of a difference since the beaver dam? It's only 3 weeks since the dam went out, maybe a month.
No, that's
been
there for a couple of years. It's just gotten worse.
No, not a couple of years. I mean, right there where you're standing on the path looking.
Oh, no, I saw beavers there years ago.
No, that's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
And one little
on and off.
That whole big area?
Yeah.
On and off.
Yeah. And
yeah.
going off to
yep.
the side.
Because I thought it was a cat the first time I saw it.
He's just really reinforced it in the last last couple months.
Yeah.
Well, it's 2 or 3 feet now. If there was anything before, it was only a foot or so.
No, at least 3 years ago, for a second I thought it was a cat because I was so not used to seeing a beaver, but it looked so fat for a cat.
Yeah, and it was probably over like a year and a half ago. Three of them right in that.
But it's going to be difficult to get rid of those the two beavers. Or maybe I think there's three actually there.
Yeah, I haven't seen the three of them.
Because apparently they've been given names, Franklin and Eleanor. And as soon as you name an animal, it's very difficult to get rid of them. And the third one, we're not sure what the relationship is. They may have a polyamorous relationship. So we named that one Polly. So there's a problem when you have three beavers with three names.
I've heard people seeing five there at the same time.
Yeah.
Another person saw four there at the same time.
And there are class trips being taken there.
I was going to say the kids
talking
love
to the kids
it. Yeah,
about
the kids love it.
About the wonders
so
of beavers and the ecology.
Yeah,
it is.
By Solar Village and the Pike Bath. She's talking about a whole different
thing.
But your concern is the flooding.
The state is only intervening by the water plant. Yeah, she's at a whole different spot.
I think we should take a look at that issue with her property over there and see if there's getting... How much closer is it getting, and what the effect might have?
Well, then other people would have that problem too, further down.
I have that problem.
Well, that's the asymptote.
Is that the basement?
No, I don't. I'm on a slab.
But these the last
I'm
house on the way to the asymptote. So,
it's by level there, but it's really backing up from whatever obstructions there are in the asymptote. And that's the problem. They need to clear this obstruction.
I thought we could just worry about the asymptote beavers and let it be a playhouse here, but this is a big bother.
Yeah, it's the
plan.
I know, 3 hours. You told your husband I'll be back in 15 minutes.
But thank you for coming, though.
Thanks a lot, yeah.
Yes, it's public comment.
Yes, it's in Mary's turn.
Do I need to go up there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and name and address again.
Mary, tell us 21 Lake Drive.
Well,
Tim Hartley and I had marked out a tree as like a high water point for the beaver. The beaver took that down, so we've lost our marker. But
what do you do with
you
it?
You had distributed something that was like a method where you could take the level of the pond that they built for their safety and just lower that. And if that got lowered, then it wouldn't be flooding over by the houses.
Right.
But that would take some engineering and a lot of work to do. Are we prepared to do that?
We don't know if we're prepared to do that. Right. Well, we don't know the cost. We don't know the cost. We don't know.
The receiver that they put into the aseptic years ago, because it's water level here and water level here, they put a tube in, so it's almost like a siphon. It balances the water on either side.
I have a pretty good
and
relationship
that might
with
be able to happen. That's our property. That's Roosevelt property, so the county's not going to help. The rich people won't help. It would be for us to find out. But a tube that connects the high side and the low side together, apparently when the beavers hear the water rushing across, they don't like that, so they go and they break sticks and they fill in the where it goes across. So if they don't hear it going across, this is what I'm hearing from the beaver people, that they're not so crazy about raising the dam. So maybe a beaver deceiver would work there. I don't know.
We'll have to really make
maybe that would
way.
Work, because with that beaver deceiver, I think the beavers actually vacated the area because
Up in the Assumpink?
Yeah. When the beaver deceiver was put in, didn't the beavers leave because they kept hearing the water running and they felt they weren't safe? What happened to them?
You don't hear the water run with the beaver deceiver.
Okay.
So they just hung out and, like, started moving further upstream. That's why they're here now. So there's many more of them, I think, than there were back in the original beaver deceiver. I think we're talking, like, beaver hotels down there and just a little condominium up here now.
I don't know. The information you sent out, they weren't calling it a beaver deceiver. It was some other...
I heard beaver reliever once.
No, they have drainage systems that are actually below water level, and they have cages around them so the beavers can't get... Well, they go underwater very easily and swim very nicely.
Well, all that stuff is in that pamphlet that you sent out last
year. Yeah, basically it keeps the water level at a certain level so that it doesn't flood.
Right.
And so there is a way of doing it. What the cost is, I don't know. We'd have to look into that.
Yeah. Maybe the environmental committee should put a beaver committee together.
I think Lou's idea of blowing beavers up.
Yes,
good idea.
Let's get a committee. I mean, something should be done to keep, for the homeowners over there. So what?
Well, get rid of the beavers.
Yeah,
world.
I mean, it's not so simple.
They say, if you think you're getting rid of them, more will come anyway. So
if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
You get rid of them, they come back.
Yeah.
Well, the state is talking about removing them from the Assunpink Lake and tearing the dam down this summer, maybe.
Let me just say one little quick thing, and I know this has been a long meeting. There was this great, I saw this great company.
Joe.
I'm sorry.
These college kids developed this company, and I saw a van. And what they did is they went around to some of these office complexes like that we have, you know, and because they had geese, they call themselves the geese police.
Oh yeah, the geese.
And they would go in and get rid of the geese that were on the premises that were on, and there's nice little ponds because they made a really nice area that the geese just loved, and they could see the predators coming, so they loved it. And they would get rid of them with dogs and with cherry bombs, believe it or not. And so the kids had fun. You know, they could send dogs out there, they could throw cherry bombs, they got rid of the geese. Geese came back like every 3 or 4 weeks or something.
Yeah.
And they were called back in again to do the same job over and over again.
Yeah.
we may run into the same situation with beavers.
Yeah, well, their instinct to survive and procreate is stronger than anything we can come up with.
These are healthy beavers.
Yeah?
These are healthy beavers.
Anything else, Mary?
Just one other question. At the Environmental Commission, Tim Hartley said he had, posts for measuring water levels.
Yeah.
And a public works employee was going to help put those up. Did you say we could get a public works employee?
Could we see about that, Peggy?
I'm sorry. I was hard to...
We had the Environmental Commission already has some posts that we want to have put in the water because we want to monitor the water level at four places along the Empty Box Brook.
Yeah, Tim and I talked about that today too, about maybe running a level around there so we can actually have real elevation data, not just relative elevation data. So we create actual benchmarks on some of these locations. So
he's got some equipment.
So we'd be able to, tell whether the water level is rising or falling.
Right. Yeah. And that's the kind of feedback we need. Could Greg or one of our public works people assist with that?
We have Fred too, part-time.
And it's basically like yardsticks. They just...
Tim is there to supervise, and so he knows exactly what to do. Sure,
should be run through Stephen.
Okay.
DPW, Public Works, Steve.
Oh, Steve. Sorry, starting to lose it.
So you can get
away
with
Joe.
It should be done.
Okay, I'd be okay.
Yeah,
be great.
Yeah, Tim and I talked about it this afternoon.
And Bob.
Thank you.
Bob's got his hands full. Okay. Anyone else from the public? All right, I will close the public portion at, I have no idea what time is.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, 10:10 p.m.
What?
So I just want to remind everyone that our next meeting is February 21st, which is a Tuesday, not the 20th, because it's President's Day. And do I have a motion to adjourn?
You have.
Yes. Second?
Yes, I'll second.
All in favor?
You think you got a no vote?
10:11.
Adjourned and see you on the 21st.